This is the City of Morro Bay City Council meeting. This is our regular meeting. It is Tuesday, May 24th, 2022. It is 5:30 p.m. This meeting is being held via teleconference pursuant to Assembly Bill 361 and Governmental Code Section 54953. This meeting will be conducted telephonically through Zoom. Ways to participate, watch, and submit public comment for the meeting will be placed on the screen when we open up public comment. There'll be a couple ways to call in. One, to connect via the Zoom link that's on the agenda, or to use the telephone number on the staff report front page, indicating how to access the Zoom meeting. Again, we will post that on the screen for you at the appropriate time. And I will ask our clerk, Ms. Swanson, to establish a quorum, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Councilmember Addis?
Here.
Councilmember Ford?
Here.
Councilmember Heller?
Here.
Councilmember Barton?
Here.
And Mayor Hedding?
Present. We do have a quorum, so I'll call the meeting to order. And this evening, I wanted to just note a couple of things for us to consider during our moment of silence. As many of you in the community may be aware, we recently lost one of our longstanding Morro Bay residents, Bill Pierce. Bill was a staple in the community of Morro Bay, and he served in so many different areas and facets of Morro Bay life. Unfortunately, Bill passed away after a courageous battle with cancer. He lived a full life with many amazing accomplishments, many of which included a three-year term on the Morro Bay City Council, a Rotarian, RCMB president, treasurer for many years. He was a communications consultant at Coast Electronics for 22 years, a former Morro Bay Citizen of the Year, Morro Bay Police Volunteer, a Paul Harris Rotary recipient, a Dan Riddell Humanitarian Award recipient, Neighborhood Watch and National Night Out member and advocate for Morro Bay Merchants, former president, and a major supporter of caroling for cops in our communities. It will be a significant loss for the city of Morro Bay, and I would be remiss if tonight I didn't ask you to remember in our moment of silence in your own way Bill's passing. Recognizing his service, great service to this community, and then lifting up his family in your hearts and your prayers as they go through this difficult time. There will be a memorial service that will be held Saturday, June 4th, 9 a.m. at Tidelands Park. Again, Saturday, June 4th, 9 a.m. at Tidelands Park. And so, thank you for that. We will have a formal proclamation that will be brought forward at our next meeting honoring Bill and his family. And also tonight, you know, it's with an extremely heavy heart that we heard today of the shooting at Uvalde, Texas Elementary School of 18 children who were killed, one adult teacher who was killed by a gunman who shot his own grandmother, left the home, and for an undetermined reason went and sought out children 7 to 9 years old in an assault on the most vulnerable of individuals that I can think of in a community. And I would just be remiss tonight if I didn't ask you in this moment of silence to consider that action. Remember the families and the loss of their loved ones as we take time to just reflect on the many blessings and the great things that we have here in Morro Bay. But to know that a community can go through a tragedy like this, one that could never be contemplated or even thought about, as possible, I think. However, the impossible has happened, and I am deeply disturbed, as many of you are, I know, and grieving already for the families of these children and for their great losses. So I will ask you for a moment of silence now, remembering in your own way Bill Pierce and the families that experienced great loss in Uvalde, Texas. Thank you. Thank you. And if we could have our flag, and we will have stand for our Pledge of Allegiance, please. Thank you. Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag, the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you, Mr. Neumeier, our city attorney. Do we have a closed session report, sir?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor. No closed session items to report tonight.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate that very much. And that brings us to mayor and council members' reports and announcements. We'll start with Councilmember Heller. Any announcements this evening, sir?
Thank you, Mayor. I have no announcements tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Addis.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you for recognizing the victims in Texas today. And I'm glad that this council, the council before it, took what action we could at the city level. And I just encourage folks to stay engaged, to not give up, even though this is such an incredibly hard issue. But my announcement is a little bit more heartening. I was able to attend Slow Pride this weekend at Laguna Lake, and it was put on by the Gala Pride and Diversity Center as well as Slow Pride. And it's been the first in-person event since the beginning of COVID. Pride used to happen at Mission Plaza in July, and this year it was moved to Laguna Lake. And I just wanted to highlight the services that Gala provides. Gala Pride and Diversity Center is downtown SLO, and so they provide phone support, local groups, support groups, video library, a memorial library where you can check out books for all ages, and then bathroom signs if you have an organization or a business that is transitioning your bathrooms to gender all-inclusive bathrooms, and you can get temporary signs there. So I just want to encourage everyone. It was a wonderful event, but please check them out at galacc.org, so galacentralcoast.org, and want to commend the organizers for a wonderful job over this last weekend.
Thank you, Councilmember Addis. I appreciate that. Councilmember Ford. Any announcements, ma'am?
Thank you, Mayor. I do have a few. Bear with me. The first, I want to bring attention to the Morro Bay Marine Swap Meet that's coming up on June 25th. Starts at 8 o'clock and goes until 1 o'clock. They're still looking for vendors. There's still spaces open. And so if you're interested in selling your goods there that day, you can go find more information and apply for your space at friendsofthembhd.org. So friendsofthembhd.org if you're interested, and not just being a vendor, but also if you're just interested in the event in general, which is free to the public. And then another thing I want to talk about is I attended via Zoom the Public Works Advisory Board meeting. It was a lively meeting. It was so full of questions and great answers by staff and wonderful input from our community. I think it was commented many times how many amazing questions there were during this meeting. Very engaged. And some of the subjects that were covered were like the role of what a PWAB member is, working on the process for traffic issues brought forward by the public, how that will look going forward, and how they will involve the board members in that process. There was also a report about the Arbor Day tree planting ceremony. There was a report, the quarterly report for the wharf was given, and capital improvement projects were covered as well. So a lot of important information there, and I appreciate everyone who was involved. Another thing that I want to talk about, and it may actually be covered tonight by our guests from the Slow Food Bank, so I apologize if I, well, it doesn't hurt to double up on information, but I want to talk about the program CalFresh. It's a supplemental nutrition assistance program, also known as SNAP, and it helps to pay for groceries by providing a monthly allowance in the form of a card, and it's accepted at many grocery stores here locally. And if you are, you know, if you are your someone that you know is in need of help paying for groceries, I encourage you to go to getcalfresh.org, or you can call 1-877-847-3663 to get help in that application process. If you need additional help with applying, on June 3rd from 10 to 4 p.m. at our Morro Bay Library, they're going to be there to assist you to help in this application process. You will need, though, to bring an ID, proof of income, and either your Social Security card or some proof of legal residency. And one last thing. Sorry for the long announcements today. The last thing is today I attended the California Department of Insurance Age My Way, a celebration of California seniors. There was some great information that was provided in that webinar. And during the webinar, it was, you know, giving us services and resources that support our local community regarding healthcare and fraud prevention and financial abuse and common scams. And a couple of standouts for me were two, I think, really important resources for our seniors. If you're listening out there, you might want to jot down these phone numbers and websites, because scams are on the rise, especially like, you know, when it comes to insurance scams and things like that. If you are concerned about a new policy that you're interested in, or you've been approached for insurance, or you're not quite sure if your insurance agent is legal, there's lots of different questions. And you can find out more information if you go to insurance.ca.gov or call 1-800-927-4357. And someone will be there to assist you on insurance oriented questions. And then lastly, questions regarding Medicare, healthcare, counseling, that sort of thing. There's a phone number if you're not quite sure how to access it, or if your plan is correct, or if you just don't really understand your plan. There's so many different things regarding healthcare for our seniors, and a lot of confusion there. So there's a number you can call if you have questions regarding that subject. And it's 1-800-434-0222. So both of those are both great resources for our seniors. And so there's a lot of fraud out there, and it's unfortunate. But there are people that are there to help. So that's all my announcements for this evening. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you for those great resources. I appreciate that. I fall into one of those categories, so I wrote the phone number down. Thank you. And Councilmember Barton, announcements.
There we go. Thank you, Jen, for having attended that Zoom call today. I was still reading and I didn't get to listen to it. So thank you for including that in your report. This week, I visited the Homeless Services Oversight Council. and heard a lot about what the county is planning to do for homelessness countywide. And it was interesting because it's kind of evolving, and it was interesting to hear where they're headed. Thinking of more maybe tiny homes and different things like that versus any sort of a tent type thing. It was just really interesting to hear how their views are changing. I also went to the Estero Bay Alliance of Care, EBAC, and heard all the good things that those different providers are doing for food and all different things in our area. And then the last one was I went to the Rec and Parks meeting the other night, and since we were talking about children in our previous meeting, I wanted to say that the love of children was on full display as the different staff members gave their reports. It's just a remarkable crew of people that we have working for us in the Park and Rec area. So those are my reports.
Well, thank you. You all been busy. That's great. And thank you for those reports on the regional and local meetings. So I have three reports very quickly. I attended the Air Pollution Control District Board of San Luis Obispo County. Of note, we did approve the budget. However, the organization will be undergoing major decreases in revenues with the impending closure of the Phillips 66 refinery. So for the first time in almost 10 years, the assessment for permits for various entities will have to be increased. The good news is there will be no assessment to cities with regard to subsidy. But the fees really have not been increased for about one time in 10 years. And so there'll be about a 6% permit fee increase for general permits from APCD. That will help balance the budget into a number of cost reduction strategies that were implemented by the board itself. Significant progress has been made on the Dapomo Dunes, decreasing the air pollution there from onshore riding from recreational vehicles. Progress to date is in line with the mandated order of abatement that came from the hearing board, which requires a 50% reduction in emissions over a five-year period. We're now year three into those mitigations and making very good progress as a board and entity with regard to that issue. As you know, the Coastal Commission has made a decision to basically close off riding over the next 3 years, now about 2.5 years. So that will hopefully fully mitigate the issues of concern there. I also had the opportunity to be invited to a conference in Long Beach this past week, the first of its kind, called Smart Coast. It was a conference put on by a statewide realty organization that is interested in the Coastal Commission's approach to dealing with the updates of local coastal plans in coastal communities. I was an invited keynote speaker because of the fact that Morro Bay's local coastal plan and general plan was an example of a plan that went through the Coastal Commission with no changes or recommendations, and also full approval, unanimous approval by the Coastal Commission, and also recognition for being a model for other coastal communities. And so with the help of Mr. Graham, who helped me put together a presentation, it was well received, and I think raised the level of awareness of what's going on in Morro Bay with regard to our approach to sea level rise, climate change, et cetera, and a model plan as noted by not only the commissioners, but others present there at that meeting. So I was happy to do that and represent the city. Lastly, I attended the RTA Regional Transportation Authority Board. We did approve our budget for this year. It is a balanced budget with no significant fee increases for riders, fortunately. They continue to occupy now month two of the occupancy of their new facility on Elks and Prado Lane. That's going very well. They also highlighted again the need for drivers and the potential for discontinuance or reduction in routes because of the lack of availability of drivers and available drivers to service RTA throughout the county. And so no announcements yet as they continue to try to recruit for those positions. But again, an example of the labor shortage that we're experiencing statewide and countrywide in a number of different areas that could impact us locally here with regard to transit. So thank you for that. That's my announcements for tonight. I'll turn it over to Mr. Collins.
Thank you, Mayor, council members, members of the community. Just real brief, we council received the first part of the budget presentation this afternoon on the operations budgets, and tomorrow at 5:30 on Zoom, Channel 20, and online, you can observe and participate in the second part, which is the capital improvement budget, which will focus on our water reclamation facility and other one water projects and other CIP projects, as well as a in-depth discussion on the Harbor Fund, Harbor Department. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate that. And I did want to make one announcement with regard to our agenda this evening regarding item B-1. This item will be continued until the June 14th regular meeting to be held via teleconference. But since the item was publicly noticed for this evening, if anybody wishes to speak on that matter, please use the raised hand feature or connect via the Zoom link if you'd like to speak on it in anticipation that it would have occurred tonight. The issue was that it was noticed to be live at the Vets Hall, obviously because of pandemic-related issues and an outbreak of COVID at City Hall. We have gone back to Zoom meetings, and thusly, that item will be continued. But during general public comment, you may reference that, folks, if you'd like to speak to that item. So that brings us to our presentations tonight. First proclamation is, and I'll invite up Garrett Olson, the CEO of the San Luis Obispo County Food Bank, an old friend, not old in age, but old in his tenure in association with Morro Bay, well known to us in facilitating a couple of our planning sessions with regard to goal setting. We appreciate Garrett greatly with regard to that, but this is to receive tonight a proclamation for Hunger Awareness Day, and I'm looking. Garrett, are you there?
I am here.
All right, there you are, sir. Great. Well, let me read this to you, and then we'll look forward to your remarks. Again, welcome this evening.
Thank you.
This is a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay declaring June 3rd, 2022 to be Hunger Awareness Day. And it reads as this: whereas the San Luis Obispo Food Bank is the leading hunger relief organization in the county, and whereas the San Luis Obispo Food Bank was founded in 1989 and has provided 33 years of hunger relief throughout the community, and whereas the SLO Food Bank provides the backbone infrastructure for hunger relief and is the primary source of quality and affordable food for over 80 partner nonprofit agencies that feed the hungry. And whereas the SLO Food Bank and its coalition partners deliver nutritious food to those in need to every community in the county, from Napomo to San Miguel, and on the coast from Los Osos to San Simeon, and to points east including Creston, Shandon, and California Valley. And whereas the SLO Food Bank provides millions of pounds of only the most wholesome nutrition, which advances and promotes important public health outcomes. And whereas the SLO Food Bank is coordinating a countywide promotion called Hunger Awareness Day on June 3rd of this year. And whereas the SLO Food Bank believes that the people of our county will rally in one day to push to donate funds needed to alleviate local hunger. And whereas people giving donations on June 3rd, 2022 can raise the funds needed to help alleviate hunger. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Morro Bay City Council does hereby proclaim June 3rd, 2022, as Hunger Awareness Day in Morro Bay. And Garrett, I just got to tell you, as a council and a community, we so appreciate your organization's service to all of those communities that were mentioned, including our community. You're a great charismatic leader. You work hard to bring nutritious, great food to the needy and disenfranchised, and those that are approaching, you know, nutritional deficiencies because of the inability to access food. And that's, I'm sure, growing as we speak, given the rising cost of food and the issues associated with inflation. So with that, I just want to thank you and welcome you and allow you to make some comments, sir.
Thank you so much, Mayor Hedding and members of the City Council, for your leadership and for shining the light on this vital community issue. And thank you, Councilmember Ford, for highlighting CalFresh. CalFresh is a vital resource for our clients. And unfortunately, of the 58 counties in California, SLO County is 57th in CalFresh participation as a percent of those who are eligible. It's tragic. And what that means is millions of dollars of federal hunger relief funds are not coming to the relief of our residents, nor are those dollars finding their way to our grocery stores and farmers markets. And that's vital. Since the start of COVID and persisting through to this day, our community is experiencing food insecurity at a level we've not seen in our 33-year history. And over the past several months, as you mentioned, Mr. Mayor, historic inflation, including double-digit increases in the cost of food, is delivering yet a crushing blow to our most vulnerable neighbors. And for the SLO Food Bank, this inflation is proving to be a triple threat. We're seeing more people needing our help, many of them who had weathered the pandemic and aren't able to weather inflation. They're coming and needing our assistance for the first time in their lives. And we're paying more for the food that we purchase. And finally, stressors on our donors' personal finances are negatively impacting their ability to continue to give. Sadly, I received an email recently from a gentleman who recently went from financial donor to hunger relief client. That's how dire these circumstances are. And we're honored to provide compassionate, nutritious hunger relief to this gentleman and tens of thousands of other SLO County residents so we can provide a bridge to a brighter tomorrow through our direct relief and, as you mentioned, through our network of other nonprofits. We keep the pantries and kitchens of 85 other nonprofits stocked so that they can provide the food to their clients. We are super proud of the efficiency of our operations, where we turn every dollar into seven nutritious meals. If I had more time, I would go into the science behind that, but it's not marketing. It's actually audited. And as you mentioned, Mayor, we're not just filling bellies with our high nutrition standards. We are fueling the health, the wellness, and the development of our neighbors. And that is vitally important because a third of those we serve are children under the age of 18, and a quarter of those who we serve are seniors. And at both ends of life spectrum, we need high nutritional value food. So June 3rd is Hunger Awareness Day. It's our largest fundraising day of the year. This is the first year where we're actually incorporating CalFresh enrollment as part of Hunger Awareness Day at separate locations, including in your community at the county library. So if you're in a position to give, go to City Park and donate. If you are in a position where you need assistance, go to your library between 10 and 4 and learn how you can sign up for CalFresh. An individual who qualifies for CalFresh can receive up to $250 a month for one person if they're eligible for CalFresh. That is life-changing. Hunger Awareness Day is truly vital for us. A lot of people think that food banks are government money or they're funded by one or two really, really big donors. That's not the case with us. We are a loving community in SLO County, and we have so many people that give at a level that they can, that $5 or $20 a month donor. And right now they're putting that $5 or $20 a month into their fuel tank or they're buying milk with it. 70% of our operating budget comes from local donors like you. And so Morro Bay community members are encouraged to visit us at City Park on Harbor Street on June 3rd, or you can go to slowfoodbank.org anytime to make a donation. City Manager Collins will be at City Park on June 3rd. Thank you so much, Scott, for continuing to be a hunger hero with us. We appreciate giving at all levels. And remember, we turn every dollar into 7 nutritious meals. Again, we thank you for your kindness, and we thank you for helping share our story.
Hey, Garrett, thank you. I just wanted to be clear. What are the hours for City Park on June 3rd?
You know what? I don't know the exact hour. I don't know the exact hours that it'll be open on June 3rd, but it's all day.
Okay, all day. So
yeah.
Perhaps 8 to 5 or something like that, maybe, so, huh?
Yeah, I think it starts at 10.
Oh, okay, 10.
Yeah. And then goes into the evening.
Okay. And then how can one access perhaps your website to make a donation online?
Just go to slowfoodbank.org, and you'll see a big button in the right-hand corner says Donate Now. It's super easy. And if you sign up and become a heart member, our Hunger Ending Action Response Team, those are folks that sign up and say, hey, every month I want to automatically give $5. If you signed up and gave $5 every month, you'll be feeding 35 people every month. And as you know, Mayor and Council, when people commit to giving and you have a reliable source of income, you can start to plan and budget knowing how much you have coming in. And so the more people that sign up for that recurring donation, the better we're able to plan for the future of our operations in meeting the needs of our community.
Well, Garrett, we'll see you on June 3rd, City Park. We'll be there.
Wonderful.
And look forward to that. And again, thank you for all the great service that you provide to our community in the communities throughout the county and beyond.
Thank you. I look forward to seeing you hopefully next year in person. City of Morro Bay, the Morro Bay City Council, and your leadership team has a special place in my heart. You guys are doing great work. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for being here. That brings us to our next proclamation. I think Mr. Endersby, are you with us this evening? I'm sure you are.
I am.
There he is. Anybody else from your department, sir, with you?
Yeah, I've got Patrol Supervisor Becca Kelly.
Yes, Becca. All righty. Well, this is a proclamation declaring a National Safe Boating Week. And Eric and Becca, I want to read it to you. This is a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay declaring National Safe Boating Week, May 21st through May 27th, 2022. And it reads as follows. Whereas for over 100 million Americans, boating continues to be a popular recreational activity. From coast to coast and everywhere in between, people are taking to the water and enjoying time together boating, sailing, paddling, and fishing. During National Safe Boating Week, the U.S. Coast Guard and its federal, state, and local safe boating partners encourage all boaters to explore and enjoy America's beautiful waters responsibly. And whereas safe boating begins with the preparation, the Coast Guard estimates that human error accounts for most boating accidents and that life jackets could prevent nearly 86% of boating fatalities. Through basic boating safety procedures, carrying life-saving emergency distress and communications equipment, wearing life jackets, attending safe boating courses, participating in free boat safety checks, and staying sober when navigating, we can help ensure boaters on America's coastal, inland, and offshore waters stay safe throughout the season. And whereas National Safe Boating Week is observed to bring attention to important life-saving tips for recreational boaters so that they can have a safer, more fun experience out of the water throughout the year. And whereas on average, 650 people die each year in boating-related accidents in the United States, 75% of these fatalities caused by drowning. And whereas the vast majority of these accidents are caused by human error or poor judgment and not by the boat equipment or environmental factors. And whereas a significant number of boaters who lose their lives by drowning each year would be alive today had they worn their life jackets. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Morro Bay City Council does hereby support the goals of Safe Boating Campaign and proclaim May 21st through 27th, 2022, as National Safe Boating Week, and start of the year-round effort to promote safe boating, and urge all those who boat to practice safe boating habits and wear a life jacket at all times while boating. Eric, thank you and your staff for all the service that you provide to the community and the safe procedures that you not only educated the community with, but also your life-saving rescue activities as well. I'd invite you to say a few words if you'd like, sir.
Thank you, Mayor Hang. I really appreciate that and appreciate you bringing this to the forefront. Before I turn it over to Patrol Supervisor Becca Kelly, I just want to thank her and her staff because they're really the ones that make it happen. Becca, Jeremiah Jacobs, Dana Stein, and Marcos Green, they're really the core of the safe boating on the bay. So I'll let Becca take it away and really tell you what it's all about.
All right. Thank you, Mayor and Council, for taking time out to give this proclamation for Safe Boating Week. At the Harbor Department, we actually feel like every day is Safe Boating Day. That's just how we have our career set up, to help people, educate them, to make sure that they're boating adventure and safely and everyone goes home at the end of the day. It's so important to check the weather forecast before you go, make sure your boat is operating properly, and of course, have the safety gear that is needed. If anyone has any questions about what that safety gear might be, don't hesitate to call our office, stop by, reach out to us as you see us on the waterfront, and we're happy to help give you some advice. There's also the California Boater Card that has great information and courses that you can find online at californiaboatercard.com. Coast Guard Auxiliary also gives classes in our area for this California Boater Card. And lastly, I did want to thank a citizen in our community for a generous donation, actually probably 5 or 6 years ago now, for the life jacket loaner station at our launch ramp. This loaner station, we keep stocked with life jackets, mainly in kids' sizes. But as a reminder, that wearing a life jacket does prevent a drowning. And so, as Eric Endersby would say, have a safe boating day. Thank you.
Thank you, Becca. Thanks for all of your work to help keep us safe as we're out on the water. We appreciate you guys greatly, Eric. Thanks for your leadership, and thank you guys for being here tonight. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. That brings us to our first of two presentations tonight. And I don't know if Mr. Collins wants to say a few words. We do have a presentation from the San Luis Obispo County Homelessness Actions and a presentation. And we have with us Susan Funk, Wade Horton, our CAO for the county, and Joe Zvonnik. If I said that right, Joe, sorry if I messed it up. Scott, you want to do a little introduction?
Yeah, real quick, because I know we're moving along and want to make sure they have plenty of time to speak. But just want to thank the county for being here, as well as Susan Funk, city council member in Atascadero, that I've been working alongside with several other folks in the nonprofit world on this steering committee to update the plan to help reduce homelessness, and really excited about the work that's coming out and already action already taken by the Board of Supervisors on a 5-0 vote to help move important initiatives forward with regard to homelessness. So with that, I'll turn it over to the team. I don't know if Wade or Joe or Susan's going to lead off, but I'll just turn it over to them to decide. I think everybody has been take it away.
Thanks, Scott. Can you hear us okay?
Yeah, Wade, you're coming through loud and clear.
Great. Unfortunately, Councilwoman Funk she was on board, but she recently had to drop off. So I'll kick us off briefly. So thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. We're excited to brief you on the homeless strategic plan that the county is moving forward in close collaboration with our city partners. Homelessness is a challenge that we're all facing throughout the county, and it's going to require a regional approach for us to have to make some significant impact. I think we have some reasonable objectives that we're trying to achieve, and with that, I will turn it over to my colleague Joe, who will provide an overview of the strategy. Thank you.
Hey, good evening, everybody. I can't tell, is the presentation going to be brought up, or do you need me to share my screen?
If you can share your screen, Joe, that'd be great. If you can, just let me know.
Gotcha. How is
looking good?
That's looking good. That's good.
Okay, great. Well, so let's get started. Again, so this is the San Luis Obispo countywide strategic plan to address homelessness. Again, I emphasize that it is not a county plan. I want to say that it's countywide, meaning that we want to bring in all the partners, the cities, nonprofits, developers, all that we can bring into this plan. In the county, we plan to lead it. We plan to fuse it all together and move it forward, but it is countywide. And again, it's to address homelessness. It is not, we don't pretend that we are going to end homelessness anytime soon. Just we want to create a method to approach homelessness a little more aggressively and humanely at the same time. So right here is our vision and our goal of the strategy. And I'll just cut right to the chase for the sake of time. Our goal is to reduce the number of people experiencing homelessness countywide to 50% of the current level within 5 years. So that's what we're doing. So we're taking the point in time count and other numbers that we have in our possession to look at and say, where are we with homelessness? And we want to reduce that by 50% to include the folks who may be entering homelessness for the first time during that five-year period. Thanks to the steering committee members, these are all the folks that have helped think through this process. And it includes here your own Scott Collins, city manager of Morro Bay, is on there, as well as people from different nonprofits, cities, lived experiences, so forth. So it's a pretty robust team, a lot of perspectives. It has been very helpful. So what the strategy does as written is, you know, we're looking at the time period from just, you know, pre-COVID 2019, and we're looking at where we are right now in terms of homelessness and how we've been addressing it. So from 2019 to 2022, you know, we'll see that there actually was a pretty impressive expansion of shelter and service capacity within the county. And I can't go through all the points and for the sake of time, but we can see that, you know, Echo Paso opened up some new beds up there with the Motel 6 conversion. And their Atascadero shelter added 10 more beds. And if you have ever been up there, you'll notice they actually created some nice rooms and what used to be open space kind of had some cloths in between them, but they made some significant improvements there. We got, you know, Capslow opening up some safe parking and things going on in Grover Beach with pallet shelters. So there have been, you know, some respectable efforts in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. But you know, homelessness is just outpacing those efforts. And those numbers right now are a homeless management information system tracks that we have about maybe 200 people a year entering homelessness for their first time or reentering homelessness per year. So, again, we're looking at the shelter capacity and we're saying homelessness is growing, you know, faster than that, those efforts. Also, to the next line here, we're saying that the other approach is to sometimes divert homelessness and bring people out of homelessness. Things like vouchers and other methods of support have also been improving and got aggressive, especially during the years where COVID, there was money available to do these things. However, the housing market began to tighten very quickly, and we saw tremendous rise in rate in rents throughout the county. To where we're looking at, you know, 50% of all rental households in Slo County right now are at risk of homelessness, meaning that they spend about 38% of their income or more on housing. So these are the things that are kind of competing with each other, right? We're trying to solve some of these things with vouchers and other methods of support, but the housing market is just becoming more and more competitive and difficult to live in. So getting back to the issue of our capacity efforts in the county, to sum it up here, we have it on the right side of the screen in words. You know, so the year-round emergency capacity increased 73% in Slo County from 2019 through now. The total maximum capacity, which includes, you know, weather-dependent shelters, safe parking, and so forth, doubled in capacity. However, on any given night in this county, we only have enough capacity to shelter 20 to 30% of the number of those homeless that we observed in the 2019 point-in-time count. And that number of homeless has most likely gone up. So we're looking at 20, 30% despite very respectable efforts in addressing homelessness and sheltering folks. And what this tells us is we just have to do something different. So this is the strategy to do something different. So right here, this is what we kind of call the big blue buttons slide, where we're looking at kind of the high points that's the focus of each year over the next 5 years. The first year, we want to focus on expanding sheltering capacity. And really, we're looking at what we're calling non-traditional housing involved in that. So what do we want to do? We want to do more things like Five Cities is doing with pallet shelters, expanding tiny home villages around the county in strategic places that make sense for people to come out of riverbeds and parks and live in a tiny home village or a palace shelter village where they can stabilize and sort of get back into society and think about where they want to move next while they're receiving more direct case management rather than going back to riverbeds and moving out of sight of those case managers. We have them in places where they have a sense of community, and we can improve them that way. Improving our efforts in homeless prevention in rapid rehousing as well. And really, we've already been undertaking a huge effort in improving our data. So right now, the data management systems for tracking our homeless in this county, the homeless management information system, the methods we're using, to be quite blunt, they're just a bit antiquated. They haven't really caught up with the volumes of people and processes going on in the county that now exist. So we need to upgrade our systems, and we need to rebuild some of the structures around those IT systems. And that's we're doing that already within the county. And that'll trickle out to the nonprofits and will be felt in the cities themselves. In years two and three, we need to step up those service capacities, a lot of the behavioral health and the addiction and sober living and all those sorts of capacities have to be, it's going to take us a little time to get those going. We can do, so the first year we're picking on things that we can do right now, like build tiny home villages, expand pallet shelters, expand safe parking, and then start working on our data processes like we are already. But there are some things that need a little more time. And funding strategies and hiring staff and the expert personnel to come along with behavioral health and serving the medically fragile and so forth. And that's where service capacity comes in. And that is one of our focuses for the second and third year. Also, you'll see regional compact. And really what that is an extension of the process we've already started, which is meeting with city managers, I'm representing the county at those meetings right now. And we are going to be developing in real time plans to address homelessness based on this strategy at those meetings. And the city managers can therefore, bring back some of their ideas to their councils, to their elected leaders, get some feedback, come back to that meeting on a monthly basis, and even in between those meetings. And we can really get things moving while keeping everybody informed and getting decisions made quickly by the right people. And the regional compact is really just to codify that effort. So as we move through the years and people rotate out of elected positions and retire and all this, that this idea will live on past that. And that's really the importance of what we're calling a regional compact. And then years four and five, we have housing capacity and data-driven refinements. And housing capacity there in years four and five is linked directly to our data improvement. And what I mean by that is, we have to understand the spectrum of the homeless that we have in our county and what their needs are. If we just continue to go out with developers, and everyone knows that people self-help and Haslow and a few others that are out there, Cal Coastal Properties, are doing great things, but even they need to have some sort of strategy that's tied to ours so we're not building three-bedroom, low-income apartments when really we have a lot of individual homeless people living in riverbeds. We don't need maybe that many three-bedroom apartments. We need different structures to address this problem, perhaps, and maybe in different locations. So we're working with those developers in building them into the strategy as well. And that'll be based on data. So that's where we see this link over here from the first year. We'll start paying off dividends when we can start building the right housing 3-4 to 5 years down the road. And ultimately what we want to get to with our data systems is making, refinements based on data. And this is really, this slide here, I know I'm up to about 10 minutes, but so this slide here just kind of blows out a lot of the details that I've already discussed about each year, where we're implementing non-congregate shelter capacities, improving, expanding our data systems, and growing our services and the housing capacity in years two and three, expanding mental health services, substance abuse disorders, and permanent supportive housing. And then years four and five, we'll start seeing the dividends maybe of our efforts now to understand the homeless spectrum that we have and build accordingly. And so that's really what this slide is getting to. And then this slide here depicts the mechanism by which we want to communicate homeless information and decision-making throughout the county using elected bodies and governing methods that we already have. The only thing we're really saying here is this Regional Homeless Action Committee is taking city managers who already have a meeting along with county staff, such as myself and Wade, and we get together and we dedicate an hour of that time at least to very specific homeless planning and discussion. And then they'll take that information, go back to the city manager, back to you all, at your city councils and mayors, and then I will interact with the boss directly when required. We're all sort of putting some things through HSOC and bringing that back into relevancy a lot of ways. And then we have the steering committee, which Scott Collins is on, is helping us devise a strategy as we move forward. So really that's what we're looking at here is I'm kind of showing that we're developing a governance method, but it's really just a regional agreement on action. And we don't need things like joint powers agreements or anything more formal than that. That's what this diagram is really trying to bring forward is the mechanism by which we're going to make this happen. And this is a long slide, but this is really just a project management tool where I just wanted to depict, for example, this is our strategy where we have what we call lines of effort. Each line of effort is a very specific area of the strategy. So, of course, the main effort would be building shelter that is affordable and appropriate, shelter and housing. And as you move along this slide through time, as you move through 2022 and 2023, these are the specific projects that are linked directly to this line of effort. So, for example, 1.1 would be the Five Cities Homeless Coalition's pallet shelter project. And then maybe this one here, 1.3, is going to be the people self-help housing, you know, Pismo Terrace unit that they're building over there. Once we put all these things in these different line of efforts on here, we can see for all at once in a unified vision who's doing what. We can see what Haslow is doing and People Self-Help and what Echo is doing and all the players that are involved in homelessness. We can put all these projects through a timeline and see them all together, and it'll help us see the picture more clearly of where we're headed and maybe what we're missing and hopefully preventing overlap at the same time. So that concludes our brief, and I'm willing to stand by for any comments or questions you might have.
Hey.
I need the slide up only if you want to ask me any questions to go back to it.
You can take down your deck. Maybe could you make sure that we all get a copy of it? That'd be great.
Yes. I know Scott has
it. You can give it to Scott if he has it. But I have one quick question that I'll ask if anybody else does. I think we all understand it's more than building housing or shelters or temporary facilities for people, but it's identifying root cause issues and then providing case management or social services to address those, like substance abuse, mental health issues, economic displacement, et cetera. I guess what I would ask is maybe in the future if we could get a presentation on that data that would show us what are some of the root causes here and how are you addressing issues to decrease recidivism with regard to homeless folks returning to homelessness because of those root cause issues. No need to try to go into detail tonight, but I'd be interested in that. Any council member questions?
Yeah.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
I have your two concerns, written down here, and I appreciate those thoughts, and we'll certainly address them.
Right. Any council member questions or comments? Seeing no hands. Well, Wade and Joe, thank you so much for being here. Scott, thanks for representing us on the steering committee. Thanks for the great work you're doing. Looks like a really cool plan. Hopefully, we can be a part of reaching some solutions for the county as a partner, and we're here to be a partner with you and just want to make sure that you know that.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate you being here. Have a great night.
You too.
Okay, that brings us to our last presentation. This is the Astound Wave update. We have with us Jason Flowers from Astound Market Development Manager. And Mr. Collins, do you want to introduce a little bit of what we're about to hear?
Yeah, so Astound Wave is a larger company that has worked to acquire Digital West, which is a local telecom that's provided some broadband services to the city and other communities in SLO County and other surrounding areas. But with the joining up with Astound Wave, which is a major player in the broadband world, there's an exciting project that they want to proceed forward with in Morro Bay. So we just wanted to make the community aware of what they're looking to do and our city council aware as well. So with that, I will turn it over to Jason so I don't spoil the story. So
welcome, Jason.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for the introduction, Scott. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, distinguished council members and staff. As mentioned before, my name is Jason Flowers. I also want to introduce Jeff Buckingham. He's our Senior Director of Business Solutions. He's on with us as well. And John Mosier, who's our Senior Manager of Network Construction. I'm going to share my screen here. Hopefully I don't have any problems.
We'll let you know.
Sounds good.
Looks good. We can see it a little bit bigger if you can. That'd be great. There you are.
Perfect. All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. So as Scott mentioned before, this is our project for Morro Bay to provide fiber to the home network expansion project. This will make Morro Bay the second city in SLO County to provide such type of services throughout the county. So just to give a little bit of a background, and Scott actually mentioned some of this as well, but in early 2021, Digital West, which a lot of you might know about already, was acquired by Wave Broadband, who along with RCN and Grande Communications, to make up the newly branded Astound Broadband. The combined company has a network throughout the United States, making Astound the country's sixth largest broadband service provider. Astound provides service to both commercial and residential markets, and we are excited to expand our fiber network throughout the city of Morro Bay. The purpose of this project is to provide the community with an alternate, all-fiber-based internet service provider, providing choice and unmatched service to the residential and commercial properties within the city of Morro Bay. Astound strives to link customers to what they enjoy most at competitive prices. Our customers choose from a variety of money-saving packages and receive valuable discounts when combining multiple services. We also provide 24-hour local professional service and support 7 days a week. Astound also receives high scores when reviewed by our customers and technology periodicals such as PC Magazine, and we have the link here in the presentation. Astound currently operates redundant network transport paths and unforeseen issues we may face. In addition, we also maintain diversity in our hardware, chassis, cards, environmental, power, and cabling throughout the network in all critical facilities. For this project, our proposed project includes the installation of passive optic network, so that's our PON, which includes the installation of fiber optic cables that provide high-performance data networking and telecommunications. Compared to copper-based cables and fiber optic cables provided higher bandwidth and transmit data over longer distances. Fiber optic cables can provide symmetrical high-speed internet at speeds up to and beyond 1 gigabyte per second. Typically, these speeds are 100 times faster than standard cable internet connection and up to 200 times faster than DSL connection. So the deployment of our technology, the XPON, is a point of multi-technology that connects an optical line terminal, OLT, to many optical network terminals, ONTs. And an XPON network utilizes passive splitters between the ONT and OLT to split the wavelength so all ONTs on the fiber can see it. ONTs are installed at subscriber premises. Residential ONTs have been traditionally installed on the outside of the home, but in recent years, the trend has been to install them in central location inside the home. The ONT is the demarcation point of the XPON service and is connected to the OLT through the PON. The residential installations can have ONTs that include the home gateway / router, POTs, plain old telephone service, or VoIP, voice over IP, ports and Wi-Fi functionality. Our fiber drop will be installed from the optical terminal up to the home DMARC location. From the demarcation point, a fiber optic outlet will be installed into the interior of the service location and connected to the back of the ONT. So here you're looking at a screenshot of the proposed phase one. So we're going to call this southern part of Morro Bay. This is where we're going to be starting our construction this year. And the second screenshot here is proposed phase two. We'll call this Morro Bay North, which will be completing completed after phase one. And then once we complete the first two phases, this will give us the opportunity to potentially complete a phase three, which will be our commercial build out. The highlighted area along the coast is along Embarcadero, And we look forward to being able to provide commercial services as well once we complete the first two phases. So the overall broadband network plan will be an estimated service location of about 5,689. And we have a forecast completion date of quarter one of 2023. And this lends us to any questions and inquiries anyone might have. Also left my phone number here. My mobile number is the best way to contact me or email if you have any questions after after we have finished this meeting.
So I wasn't the technology or the terms PON and all that stuff I'm not familiar with, but I shouldn't be anyway. So basically, are these wire cables that like Spectrum comes to our homes or businesses directly yeah. through a direct line? Is that how do you, yeah, what does it look like basically from a network standpoint?
Yeah, from a network standpoint, it's going to be a traditional cable line that you would notice in your home, but it's going to be connected directly into where we provide the fiber optic. And the fiber optic is probably about the size of your pinky. It goes straight through the cable line, straight into the home. And that gives us the ability to provide that symmetrical. And that's just a good way of saying that it's fast going in, it's fast coming back out.
And so if somebody had an existing service provider, I won't name names, and eventually wanted to switch over, would you use that same connected line?
Yes, that's the that's what we plan on doing, using the existing lines there, upgrading them, and then being able to provide that faster service.
Well, and to clarify
yeah,
that,
yes,
we don't use the actual cable line. Like what Jason's meaning is we use the telephone poles and the infrastructure that's there, but the connection we're providing is actually a separate fiber connection straight into the home. It doesn't reuse anything from any other provider.
So if I understand it correct, I don't want to prolong this, but if I have another provider and I have a line coming from the telephone line, a telephone pole line, directly into my house, that would be removed and you would install your own that would come into my home if I decided to use it.
Correct. It could either be removed or it might stay.
Okay.
And we'd send another one in. You know, there might be cases where people would want to have both, and they certainly could.
Right. And of the 5,600, I don't remember the number or so, to be implemented in quarter one of 2023, how many of those are commercial businesses?
We don't have a specific breakout of commercial businesses yet. We should have that as we go through the process of doing walkouts, finding out, you know, how many exactly are residential, how many are business. So we'll probably have that pretty soon as we start construction.
Yeah, and I assume you'll be more competitively priced at a higher speed than
yes.
other providers, perhaps. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what we're aiming for, Mr. Mayor.
And the big difference here is the, you know, with a typical connection, say through a cable connection, they're set up as a fast download and a slow upload, which works out fine for residential service. But as people are doing more working from home, there's more facilities in the cloud, even for residential customers, that upload speed becomes important. And so as Jason mentioned, with a fiber connection, the download speed and the upload speed are the same. They're not different. And that's what allows people to work from home. And that's what really will classify Morro Bay as a gigabit city, where, you know, people could buy a home or rent a home in Morro Bay or rent an apartment and literally have the kind of connectivity they would normally have had to be in a big city to have in the past.
And I assume this includes City Hall or City Services as well on the installation up front.
City Hall's actually already connected.
Why I want to make it. And the remainder of City Services.
Yeah, Scott made sure we got City Hall connected. What, Scott, was it last year or something?
Right.
That's right.
Okay. Well, thanks, Jeff and John. And I'll open it up to any questions that anybody might have. Jason and or Jeff. Okay, well, gentlemen, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Jeff, perhaps your shirt will not look red with the new service.
I know. I always have a lot of red on.
No, I'm just kidding. It's a blue shirt. I can tell.
Teased on the school bus and everything. So
gotcha. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Look forward to it.
Thank you.
Have a great evening. Thanks for being here. All right, Council, that brings us to item public comment item. This is general public comment for any members of the audience wishing to comment on any items on the agenda for which you can't stay, or any general items you would like to address to the city at this time. The link information for public comment is on our screen right now. You can phone in. Be sure to press star 9 and raise your hand, or you can use the Zoom link by clicking on that link or typing it into your browser. So with that, I will go ahead and open up public comment. This is general public comment. And Hyland, do we have public comment, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have a raised hand from Chris Rudebush.
All right. Welcome, Chris.
Good evening.
Welcome. Hi, Chris.
Hi, my name is Chris Rodebush, and I'm representing the We Are the Care initiative. I wanted to start out with a quick story from a local parent. She said, I had to find care for my infant son when my in-laws were suddenly unable to care for him any longer while my husband and I were back at work. I added my son to 15 different wait lists, and over the next year and a half, I heard back from two. Neither of these centers were able to offer us a spot for my son during the time that we were in desperate need, and we had to piece together care for my son between a multitude of friends, in addition to my husband and I taking time off work. Thankfully, I work at a child care center, so my son was able to come with me once he reached 18 months of age. But I can't imagine what I would have done if this persisted and I had nowhere for him to go. This is just one story of a desperate parent in Slo County, and these are the stories that we are hearing and that we continue to keep gathering. We Are the Care was born out of the Where's the Care Town Hall back, I can't believe it, May 2019, over just about 3 years ago now, and our work has been inspired by parents and provider voices on the Central Coast. We know that feeling truly heard and knowing that others are deeply listening to our struggles is how we begin to feel supported and how goals are formed and achieved. Because of this, We Are the Care has launched a Community Voices Tour this month across Slo County. Community Voices Tour and accompanying survey is allowing us to gather experiences, struggles, victories, and needs from parents and caregivers. And the survey will inform our work to identify areas of priority as we continue to shore up support for the Slo County child care system. We have to again extend gratitude to this city council for its continued support. Not only have you truly listened to our message, but you've addressed it and have asked for more tasks to further champion young children in our community. As we hear from the residents, we will definitely report back. We did want to let you know that the Community Voices Tour will be in Morro Bay at Tidelands Park on Sunday, July 3rd, from 9:30 to 11, and we will be sure to let you know of that date again in the future. If you are interested to learn more or get involved with We Are the Care, you can find that out at First Five Slo County or go to www.first5slo.org. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris. Hyland, next public comment, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Up next, we have Betty Winholtz.
Welcome, Betty.
Hi. I just needed to unmute. I wasn't going to actually make a comment until I heard the last presentation, and I have two questions about that, and it may be too late to get answers, but one of the questions would be if they're not removing old wires as they put up their new wires, then it sounds to me like we're going to get more overhead wires, which will clutter even more our neighborhoods. So I just wanted to point that out, and I'm not thrilled about that. And I know at one point the city was talking with PG&E about undergrounding wires, and we have that downtown, but we haven't pursued that in other neighborhoods. So I would just like to bring that back to the front burner. And then my other question regarding that same presentation was, are we to assume that this is a 5G type of operation? And are those 5G towers already being erected in our city and we don't know it? Or is that something that's being done through PWAB, and we should have listened to it through PWAB. Thank you.
Thanks, Betty. Hyland, next public comment, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Up next, we have Linda Winters.
Okay. Welcome, Linda.
Well, thank you. Mr. Mayor and staff, I'm just a tiny tad confused at this particular moment. I literally got off a plane less than 12 hours ago, dashed home, put myself together, was planning on not attending the meeting tonight because I've been literally out of town and out of state in large groups of people, and I thought it would not be prudent for me to attend the live meeting in my regular spot. And I pulled up the agenda and didn't really realize that it was totally going to be Zoom. And my question to all of you is, when was it decided and why was it decided that this meeting, and will this be the only meeting that will be via Zoom? Are we going back to that again? And hope everything is all right at City Council. And that's basically all I have to say. I hope somebody can answer those questions for me. And hopefully we'll be back in our regular spot before too very long. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Hyland, next public comment, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There are no more public commenters in the queue.
Okay, I will close general public comment, bring it back to council. Regarding our Zoom meetings, we're taking it meeting by meeting. Just very briefly, we had an outbreak in City Hall. I won't go into details, obviously, with regard to individuals, but it was rather significant. It was contact traced back to the Veterans Hall at the last City Council meeting. As a result of that and the rising case rate in the county and locally, we decided to temporarily suspend live meetings, and we'll be surely informing you as we make decisions prior to each meeting when we might come back live again. And I don't know, Scott, if our guys from or folks from Astound are here, but can we answer Betty's questions about, will old wires be removed? And also, I know we did have through, maybe Mr. Graham is here, update us on 5G.
It looks like Jeff Buckingham is still on the queue, so I'll can let him respond to that.
Did you hear the question, Jeff?
Yes, I did. On the first question, yes. Those wires that – there's wires on those poles that belong to AT&T and to Spectrum, and obviously it's – we are not in a position to be removing their wires. So we install the new facilities, and, you know, whatever happens with the other ones is the responsibility of those companies. But I think it's also useful to note that cities that have undergrounded all their utilities typically aren't getting any fiber because when the utilities are undergrounded, almost no cities make provisions for future growth. So the only way for a new provider to come in, they have to dig up the whole city, which nobody can afford to do. So the reason that Morro Bay is in a position to get, you know, become a gigabit city is because most of the city is served by those telephone poles, which make it more economical to deploy that network. So that was a big factor in our decision to be able to deploy in Morro Bay. The other one, though, frankly, is that having worked with the city for a number of years on projects that work together, we felt that we could work with the city and Scott and his team, and it would be a good city to work in. Some cities are not easy to work in, and they're not cooperative, and it's a very difficult situation. Morro Bay is a good city to work with, and that relationship is a very important part of it. So I want to address that. Regarding 5G, the fiber has absolutely nothing to do with 5G, other than 5G is a wireless technology that is enabled by fiber. So essentially with 5G, instead of having towers miles and miles apart, you have towers very close together. They're all fed by lots of fiber. So what we're putting up has nothing to do with 5G. None of it's wireless. It doesn't have any radiation or any of that. It's all, information delivered by light over the glass fibers to everyone's homes and businesses.
Through the cable.
Through the cable.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate that.
Yep. You bet.
Okay. That brings us to our consent agenda. This is item A, including items A1 through A11. And I'll go ahead and open up public comment. This is public comment for the consent agenda only, items A1 through A11. And we have information on the screen on how to access public comment. And Highland, do we have any public comment for consent?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have a raised hand from Betty Winholtz.
Okay, welcome back, Betty.
Hi, this is Betty Winholtz again. I wanted to comment on A4 and A5. A4 is about continuing to allow the city to not meet in person. And I would go along with Ms. Winter's previous comments. I think it's I appreciate that there was some encounter, but my understanding is that people shelter, and then that shelter is only for 5 days these days, or 10, depending on what the circumstance is. And so I really hate to see us, in my opinion, go backwards, and would hope that we, particularly with the budget, the goal setting, all the things that are happening right now, the public is really limited because they don't participate in Zoom, but they will come out to a council meeting at the Vets Hall. So I hope you will take that into serious consideration, and that you need to open the city back up to in-person meetings for all the subcommittees, your advisory committees, as well as the council. And then regarding item number 5 about the smoking dispensers, I listened to that when that was presented, and I guess I just want to voice my objection to that, because I think it does contradict where the city was heading with no public smoking, and to put up those containers. And not just the contradiction, but my second reasoning is it creates more work for staff, and for staff who are on the front lines. They have to monitor it. They have to measure it. I mean, it's listed in the staff report that it's a work-producing activity, and I'm not sure that that's important for us. We already have volunteers that collect butts in our buckets along the different streets, and so I kind of see it as a duplication. And that was all volunteer and did not involve staff time, and so it saved them for more important things. So I just wanted to express my opinion against A5. Thank you.
Thank you, Betty. Highland, next public comment, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have no more raised hands in the queue.
Okay, I'll close public comment on consent agenda, bring it back to council, and either entertain a motion and or anything to pull. Councilmember Ford, yes.
Thank you, Mayor. Two things. First, I want to thank Jan Goldman for stepping up yet again to offer to be on the PWAB. She's an amazing citizen, and I just appreciate her volunteerism and in our community. And the second thing is I would like to pull item A5 because of a possible economic conflict of interest. So,
you want to recuse yourself from voting on that?
Yes.
Okay. So
item A5.
What we'll do is when we have a motion, I'll ask for a motion excluding A5, and then we can have you vote separately. And
perfect.
You won't have to vote on that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Great. Councilmember Addis.
I'll move to approve all items except for A5.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Motion by Councilmember Addis, seconded by Councilmember Barton, to approve A1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Addis.
Yes.
Councilmember Ford?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
And Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
And then Councilmember Ford is recusing herself for item A5. I'll make a motion to approve A5.
Second.
Motion by Mayor Heading, second by Councilmember Addis to approve A5. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll ask for a roll call vote.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
And Mayor Heading?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0-1.
Great, thank you very much. That completes our consent agenda. As we said earlier, item B1 is moved to the next meeting on June 14th. It will be continued at our regular meeting on June 14th, 2022. Any members of the public wishing to speak to that had the opportunity during public comment. So that brings us to business items, item C-1. And that is adoption of resolution number 4822, approving consent of landowner document for California Coastal Investments, LLC, doing business as Libertine Brewing Company, Eric Newton, for redevelopment of lease site 8686 West, 801 Embarcadero Road. Turn this over to Mr. Graham and Mr. Endersby. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Heading. I'll be calling on Community Development Director Graham here in a minute, phone a friend, and I'm going to fill in some of the blanks here. So what we have is this resolution tonight approving the consent to landowner document for what's Libertine Brewing Company. It's really Eric Newton, who's the proprietor of that business, as California Coastal Investments, for redeveloping that lease site. As an alternative tonight, the council could elect not to approve this consent to landowner and sort of send Mr. Newton back to the drawing board with Planning Commission through the conceptual process, conceptual approval process, but not really be a designer of the, a redesigner of the project per se. That's really the Planning Commission's job. Fiscally, the impact, really, this action has no fiscal impact, but if and when this lease site does get redeveloped, there should be a good positive fiscal impact, and that it'll go on a modern lease, which it's on interim lease right now at a kind of a bare minimum rent with some percent gross requirements. But if it's built out as proposed, we'll get some TOT rent out of it, an additional percent gross rent with some hotel operations. The background on this is Mr. Newton is on a 3-year interim lease that the city executed back in 2020. Mr. Newton was the owner and operator, is the owner and operator of Libertine Brewing Company. He was a subtenant under the previous leaseholder, master leaseholder, Bert Caldwell, as you may recall. Mr. Caldwell had a Pitkin lease and attempted to redevelop that site over a period of about 25 years, and none of his plans ever came to fruition for a number of reasons. He decided to throw in the towel and let the lease revert back to the city. We did a two-year interim lease with Mr. Caldwell when that Pitkin lease expired in 2018, just to get us over to this portion where we are now. And so Mr. Caldwell's moved on. Mr. Newton has got this 3-year lease where he had requirements to submit a redevelopment plan for the lease site, which he did. And he's been working with community development and myself and redesigning or redeveloping that lease site, his plans for that lease site. He went through Planning Commission on a conceptual basis, not for concept approval, not the traditional concept approval, but on a conceptual basis to get PC's input in general on the direction in which to take this lease site before we brought it to council for consent of landowner, because we've had instances in the past where we've gone to council for consent of landowner and then they go to PC for the regular permit approvals, and then instances where the leaseholder thought that they had council approval and then really didn't think they had to go through Planning Commission, where that's really not the case. So trying to do this a little bit differently and do it a little more effectively. So at this point, I'll get into the sort of the process a little bit later and what's in the consent to landowner. I'm going to turn it over to Scott Graham to take on, you know, what happened at Planning Commission and give a few more details on the project itself. Scott?
Thank you, Mr. Endersby. So we did, as Eric indicated, we did go to a conceptual review hearing before the Planning Commission with a design from Eric Newton. That went on February 1st of 2022. The plans that were provided to the Planning Commission to provide comments on were quite a bit different than the ones that are you see renderings of in the packets, and I'll go over a few of those renderings in the site plan here in a second. But the Planning Commission reviewed it. They had commentary related to setbacks from the street, wanting to have a wider sidewalk in the front. There's a pinch point there. They talked about improving the view corridor from the street end. They also talked about reducing the massing on the second floor. The design when it went to Planning Commission had about 100% the square footage on the second floor that the first floor had. Waterfront master plan requires 70%. The project has been redesigned to address that concern. Planning Commission was interested in the public benefit component of the project. They're proposing a wider than normal harbor walk. 10 foot's required, plan has 15 feet. They're also proposing to create the plaza, close off the street end and create a plaza area out there that might have removable furniture and things like that in a space that potentially could be programmed for small events and things like that. I'm gonna do a quick share of my screen here. And should be able to see plans. This is the, at the top is the lower floor plan for the project. It has the restaurant component on the lower floor. It has towards the right-hand side is where the Embarcadero is. It has outdoor seating, and then it has a covered seating area. And then it has the, back of house stuff for the kitchen facilities for the restaurant. Kind of move to the second floor, and I'll kind of scroll up here. You have 7 hotel rooms on the second floor. Each of them will have a private outdoor space that might have a seating area, maybe a fire pit, something along those lines, and then a larger deck out in front of that, that could be used publicly, with limited hours, maybe have it during the day, and then it's closed off, so the rooms have privacy in the evenings and through the morning, kind of the concept. Here's some drawings of the facility, at least to the point where we're at right now. On the upper left-hand side, that would be the front-facing portion of the building facing Embarcadero. Opposite that, on the right side of the drawing, is the portion that would be facing the harbor. And then the one towards the bottom is the north-facing elevation that faces the current project that's under construction. This being the Harbor Walk Plaza project that's being built by Sharice Hansen and Travis Lee. Have some renderings of the sites that the applicants provided. In the upper left hand, you can see that front elevation. You also see how the building steps down towards where the plaza will be. It shows the outdoor seating area. We've got the same kind of expanded view in the upper right hand corner there. Scrolling down to the two on the bottom, again, kind of zoomed in that outdoor seating area, see the plaza kind of beyond it without anything really developed on it. We're working with Mr. Newton to kind of develop what that might look like for his future submittal, assuming he receives consent of landowner to move forward. Kind of an upper aerial in the upper left-hand corner there. The right-hand, again, is kind of an expanded view from across the Embarcadero toward the south side of the building. Then you have the two renderings below. The one on the left is taken from the west side or the ocean side, the water side, bay side of the project. And then the one on the right, in the lower right hand, is taken kind of from Centennial Stair. It shows you kind of what that view corridor would look like with both, a new project in the subject location as well as the project that's currently under construction, what it might look like with those. Again, we are working with the with Mr. Newton on fine-tuning the plans at this point, but we are, I can stop sharing my screen now. But we are at a point now where the plans have gotten to a phase of development where we're ready, if the council is in agreement, to sort of move forward to Planning Commission for the conceptual concept and precise plan process, which goes to Planning Commission and then City Council, then off to Coastal for the Coastal Development Permit, and then back to Planning Commission if there are, for precise plan if there are changes made by Coastal. So with that, I will turn it back over to Mr. Andersby. And you can go through the rest of the consent of landowner conversation.
Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Graham. Appreciate that. So, yeah, there's a lot of back and forth even before we got to PC with Mr. Newton and Scott's team, and they did a great job in kind of massaging it towards somewhere where we can get to an acceptable plan. So now that he's completed that review with PC, it's time to see if council is good with this conceptually and the plan. You know, Mr. Newton will have to develop, full set of plans to submit to Planning Commission for the regular discretionary procedure. You know, he's got basically the minimum right now just to sort of lay out what this whole thing looks like. So if the council elects to send him approve the consent to landowner, that would be his cue to move off on to the Planning Commission with a full set of plans. We've got a draft consent to landowner document included with the staff report. Basically followed the format that we've done of previous consent to landowners, where we've got deadlines in there, provided plenty of pad in there, we hope, knock on wood. I know we've had to extend a number of deadlines. I never like to do that. So I'm talking with community development and Scott and Mr. Newton as well, and reviewed these dates we put in there. All are comfortable that those are reasonable, not excessive, but not too unreasonably tight either. So process-wise, Mr. Newton would go through Planning Commission. Once he get concept plan approval from Planning Commission, that would be the time he could have a new long-term lease enabled for the lease site. We would start negotiating that somewhere where he, probably while he's in Planning Commission review, getting close to finishing, perhaps. And so we'd be bringing back a long-term lease sometime after that. And as Scott Graham said, he gets concept review approval from the city, then he's got to go to the Coastal Commission for the regular Coastal Commission process and any other permits he needs to get. So the basic timeline for the consent to landowner is if it's approved tonight, he'd apply for a conditional use permit or concept plan approval by this coming August. So give him about 3 months to do so. Give him about 8 months to obtain his conditional use permit or concept plan approval from the city. About 2 months to negotiate a new lease. After he gets that concept approval, and once he gets his new lease, 120 days after he gets his new lease, he'd have to show proof of adequate funding for the project, apply for coastal development permit no later than July 31st, so about 3 months to do that. And these are, months from the previous approval that I'm kind of lining out just to give you sort of an idea of how it looks. 5 months to obtain the coastal development permit, apply for city precise plan approval, which is, building plans. 3 months to do that, 4 months to get through the precise plan approval process. And once he gets through precise plan approval, get the building permits applied for 3 months to get building permits applied for, and then 3 months to get the building permits and then get under construction by April 30th, 2025. Sounds like a long way out, but as you know, all these steps take a fair amount of time. Mr. Newton's pretty confident he can move a lot quicker than that. He has his own construction company and he's done a lot of plans and he's got a good architect. So I suspect he'll get through those processes pretty quickly and then give him a year to complete construction. So April 2026 to complete construction. So this is one of the last remaining lease sites, older lease sites, built in the 1960s and 70s, in the heart of Embarcadero to modernize and upgrade this property. As you know, the site next door is mostly a dirt lot now and it's getting redeveloped as well. Mr. Newton has pursued this pretty diligently. He's complied with everything he's been asked of so far. And we're recommending that this consent to landowner be approved by way of this resolution. That's it. That's all I've got. You got any questions?
That's all you got, huh? Okay.
I got.
Hey, thanks, Eric and Scott. Appreciate that. We'll go to council questions.
Mayor,
have to relearn how to use Zoom. Sorry about that. Thank you, Eric, and thank you, Scott. I appreciate the presentation. We'll go to council questions, and then after that, we will go to public comment and come back for discussion and recommendation. Eric, for purposes of the public and or Scott Graham, could you just review what the difference is between a consent or what is a consent of landowner versus a conditional use permit or a CUP versus a master lease agreement?
Sure, I'll take a shot at that, Mr. Henning. So consent of landowner is basically we're the landlord to all these waterfront lease sites, and consent of landowner is a means for public review of a proposed direction in which to take a lease site in very general terms. It's not concept plan approval like they do at Planning Commission, where they review the waterfront master plan and all the code things they have to comply with. It's really just a conceptual view of the lease site and the direction to take it, and it's the landlord's permission for the tenant to submit those plans to the Planning Commission to start that process. The master lease itself is a long-term lease agreement with the City of Morro Bay between the tenants on the waterfront that spells out what everybody's obligations are, like most lease agreements. And then concept approval, I mean, that's basically conditional use permit approval by the Planning Commission, and that's what I spoke about a second ago. It's the regular discretionary permitting process where a homeowner, a business, anybody proposing to do building or modifications to it has to go in front of the Planning Commission, and they apply all the rules and regulations and standards.
Great, thanks. And again, I think maybe council knew that, but often it's confusing to the public as to our process. And then the way I've understood it is, as he's gone before the Planning Commission, just conceptually to get their input, and obviously Mr. Graham went over the initial reaction to the concept. So my question is, you're not really asking us tonight to look at the detailed concept plan at this point, because that will go back to Planning Commission. They will have a public hearing. That input will then come to council to act on. Is that correct?
Correct. And I'm going to let Scott Graham fill that in a little more, because he's the expert on this.
All right.
So thank you for the question, Mayor. I think really what we're looking at, what the City Council is doing as part of their, their role in the lease process of our waterfront lease sites, is one, you're making sure you're like any application that comes into us that might not be from an owner requires an owner's authorization to submit an application to us. We have to have that in order to move forward with a conditional use permit, as would be the example here. So that's the act that and the position that the council is filling this evening is providing that authorization to bring that to allow the project to come forward. So really, what you're looking at is that something that you want on your property? Like base idea, is a mixed use project that might have a few hotel rooms and some retail restaurant on the bottom floor a good thing? Because if it's not, maybe you don't want to give authorization for them to submit the application. That's about the extent of what you're really looking at here. It's a little more baked than that because we needed to go to the Planning Commission to get the conceptual review comments to get something that was more in line with the requirements that are down on the waterfront. But that's really what you're doing. Just like if this is an idea that you think is worthwhile to move forward and you're comfortable with it, then you issue the consent to landowner and they can submit their applications to planning. If you're not, you want them to do something else, this would be the time to say that.
Okay, so if we determine that, basically what the second question I had, I guess, was the real opportunity for us to look at the details, if we like the concept, would be after the Planning Commission reviews it, issues a CUP, and it comes to council for review.
Yeah, they will be, as part of that conceptual concept process, they will be going to Planning Commission for recommendation to City Council. Right. City Council will be making the ultimate decision on whether you want that to move forward or not, but you will get that recommendation from your Planning Commission. And then, assuming you did approve it, then it would go off to Coastal for the Coastal Development Permit, and then it actually comes back to Planning Commission to pick up any changes to the precise plan process.
So a number of public hearings that involve vetting of that, correct?
Yep.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, if I may add, I want to do a little more description on that. This is kind of akin to what we do with Coastal Commission. We, as projects, on the waterfront come forward, we're talking to Coastal along the way to make sure that we don't send them a non-starter. We kind of did the same thing here. We bring it to Planning Commission to make sure that you're not giving them something that's a non-starter.
Great. Good clarification. Just two more questions. One, Eric, item four on your page 83, 120 days after obtaining a new lease, show proof of adequate financing for the project. Wouldn't you want to know that somebody's financially viable prior to doing that or getting to that stage? And have you done a preliminary financial review of the financial capacity of the individual to perform.
Fair point. We have had some financial review of Mr. Newton's finances, you know, as far as bank account stuff that he's got in the bank now. This is going to be a couple of years down the line, next year, by the time we get there, about a year down the line. We could move that up sooner to make sure we don't get too far down the road before he's got to show financial proof.
Well, my concern is if you don't have somebody that's financially viable and you've gone through one or two years worth of the project, come back and find out that they're not financially viable, you've wasted 2 years or whatever. So I'll save that for my recommendation. Last point was same page, number 63. I'll go back to your opening comments there. Let me find my note, sorry. Page 82 of the staff report. Top sentence basically says that allow them to develop and submit a proposal for the Side Street development. The lease provided for September 30th, this lease provided for a September 30th, 2021 deadline for Mr. Newton to submit his long-term vision. Have we received, or when will we receive, a marketing plan and a business plan?
We have not received a marketing plan or business plan. I currently don't have that in the consent of landowner. We did have that in TLC's next door, as you might recall, but that was a total redevelopment from day one. Mr. Newton already has his, Libertine Pub is an established business both here and in San Luis Obispo, so we did not put that in the current consent of landowner agreement.
But this is a hotel, and he doesn't currently operate a hotel. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Heller.
Thank you very much, Mayor. Appreciate the questions you asked. I am also concerned about the financing issue, but we can talk about that in comments. Question I have is the plaza area, which is a great idea. I think it's something we've talked about quite a while here. If the plaza area goes forward as currently designed, will that be under the control of the city in terms of the use of that plaza, or will that be under control of the tenant there?
It would be a Councilmember Heller, thank you for the question. It would be a public plaza area, and probably under the control of the city if we wanted to, say, program it with, small events and things like that, potentially through recreation or something along those lines.
Okay, and then what about the maintenance of the plaza? Would that also be city's responsibility in terms of cleanliness and so forth?
It would be, yes.
Okay.
Kind of like it is now.
Yeah.
The parking area, yeah.
And then in terms of parking, so there'll be no parking there. How do you compensate or offset the loss of parking with this particular development?
Would be offsetting the loss of parking. We've taken a look at this plan about creating plazas in this location. This is one way to get the plaza because the city doesn't have the money to do it itself currently. And so having the adjacent developers put the plaza in is what we would be doing in this instance.
Is there a parking in lieu compensation involved with the loss of parking or not?
There is not. It's not a loss of parking because they're creating the loss of parking. They're putting a plaza in that has been reviewed in the past by Planning Commission, City Council in this area.
Okay, thanks. Those are my questions, Mayor. Thank you.
Thanks, Councilmember Heller. Councilmember Ford, yes, please.
All right. Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Endersby, for this report. I actually tuned in and listened in on the Planning Commission's conceptual review of this project, and it is a dramatic change. And I could see that Mr. Newman took a lot of those requests and put them into this new concept. And I do appreciate having that 70% versus the 100% on the second story. I think it's important to keep as much of that view of our harbor secured for others to see from other viewpoints. I think that's really important on these new projects. But my question is, maybe I missed it during that meeting, during the Planning Commission, but was that if you remember, I guess this would be a question for Scott, did they request that the, was it the Planning Commission's idea to have that as a public space on that second story, or was that something that Mr. Newman came up with on his own?
That was a Planning Commission request that we look at opportunities to sort of, I think, have a synergy between maybe the public space that would be the plaza, and maybe this would be something that could leverage that in that they would be able to use from the libertine standpoint, from their business standpoint. Mr. Newton seemed interested in that and then placed it on his plans. We would, you know, we'll be working through details of what that looks like before we come, you know, through a discretionary permitting process, how it's used, when it's used, should it be used that way. That analysis hasn't taken place yet.
Okay. That answers my question then, because I wasn't sure if that was some sort of requirement that was put forth. So that's still to be decided. Okay. Well, that's really my only other question, since we're not asking about necessarily like details of the project. That's all I've got. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Ford. Other questions? Jeff, is your hand back up or? Okay.
No, I just haven't lowered it. Sorry.
Yeah. We're relearning Zoom here tonight.
Yeah.
Thanks. Any further questions? Okay. Don't see any hands. We'll go ahead and open public comment. This is public comment for item C-1 in our agenda. Public comment is now open. Information on public comment is on the screen, as mentioned previously, either through clicking on the link and placing it in your browser or using your phone with phone number. Be sure to use *9 to raise your hand. And Hyland, sir, any public comment?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have a raised hand from Cherise Hansen.
Okay. Welcome, Cherise.
Thank you. Hi, good evening, Mayor and council members. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Okay. So my name is Cherise Hansen. I have Harbor Walk Plaza, or will pretty soon here, and Under the Sea Gallery. Hopefully you all had time to read my correspondence to approve the consent of landowner to Eric Newton and request council recommend to the Planning Commission that they be open to the idea of increasing rooms with views and decks and opening up the corridor between the two new developments between Harbor Walk and Libertine. You were just discussing the budget, so this fits right in. The Tidelands area in Embarcadero is mainly funded by the revenue of the Tidelands businesses. This area is also home to tons of public benefit free services. And in order to pay and maintain those services, there needs to be viable businesses. The lots that are meant to be revenue producing need to maximize their space and maximize the revenue, best use of space. The Tidelands city owned portions are falling into disrepair with little to no room for growth. Camping being shut down, paid parking at Rock sidelined, property tax initiative might be passed, but there's still millions needed to maintain Harbor. The Libertine is most likely the only proposing development that could increase revenue for the city and Harbor in the next 10 years. This configuration of this development will be a contributing factor to the economy for over 50 years. It is imperative to the Harbor and city budget to get this right and to have the best use of space. Using the numbers from Rose's Landing Inn, an ocean view room with private deck just next door could yield over an ocean room view with a private deck can yield over $26,000 more for the city and over $9,000 per year for the Harbor if you increase one additional ocean view room. Oh, man. Private decks with views in the six side rooms could yield over $15,000 for city and $5,500 per year for Harbor. In 50 years, that's an increased total of $776,000 for city and $455,000 possible for Harbor if you include one more ocean view room and create private decks with views on the other rooms. As far as my project and this design, my vision when we began had a 10 to 15 foot view corridor between them, a place where grass and people could have a relaxing area, view of the corridor off to the ocean, a place for bike rentals, bocce ball, and additional access to the Harbor Walk. I know my building stands alone as a beautifully crafted, eco-friendly, LEED certified building. It's a welcome new addition to the Embarcadero. With construction costs going sky high and our budget increasing by 25%, I would like the city to just try to do
better. Thank you, Therese. Thank you. Time has been up. Thank you.
Thanks.
Highland, next public comment.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have no more raised hands in the queue.
Hey, I'll go ahead and close public comment and bring it back to council. And I personally am prepared to adopt Resolution 4822, approving a consent of landowner document for CCI's redevelopment proposal. The lease site 8686W with the following changes, specifically, number one, vetting or reviewing the financial capacity to perform for the applicant prior to obtaining a new lease. Number two, prior to executing a new lease, provide a business and marketing plan for the newly approved concept. And then those would be my only additions to that. And the comment I'll make is that Mrs. Hansen's comments will be vetted by the Planning Commission. At this time, it'd be premature for council to weigh in on those details. So I won't be responding to those at this time, but think that those are good comments for the Planning Commission to consider. It's not part of my motion, just part of my response to that public comment. I think this lease site has been in great need of redevelopment. I think it opens up some new public space. I love the idea of the 15-foot harbor walk, which will greatly expand that and provide coastal access. And I trust our Planning Commission will vet it appropriately to further define the parameters involved with the redevelopment of this site. It was unfortunate that the former master leaseholder had to go through such a long process trying to actually develop a project here, but here we are today, and I think we would like to see this, or I personally would like to see this developed as quickly as possible, given the parameters outlined by staff. So that would be my motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'd make a suggestion that for the two additions that you're suggesting for consent of landowner, that they could be added to number three on the timeline of consent of landowner, and it's understood the two conditions, both proof of financials and then a business plan, and I could work with Director Endersby on the language for that if council approves this in concept.
Thank you, Chris, and thank you for that clarification. I'll amend my motion to do exactly what you said. Thank you.
I'll second. Nope, I see Jeff's hand up.
Oh, Jeff, I'm sorry, I see your hand.
Second.
Got to take no. I'll second the motion. Thank you, Don.
Thanks. Okay. Motion by Mayor Heading with those changes as outlined and so eloquently redirected by our city attorney, second by Councilmember Heller. And Councilmember Addis, further comments, and then Councilmember Ford.
Yeah, I mean, I just was going to say, I think this is starting to be the right project at the right time. I love the coastal access. I love the vitality that this could bring to the Embarcadero. I'm fine with those additions on the timeline. I think there are things that someone in this kind of business should and would be doing anyway. So I feel comfortable adding those aspects to this and fleshing it out more. And I look forward to this project going through the process and coming back in the future.
Thank you, Councilmember Addis. Councilmember Ford, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I actually have one additional question, if it's okay, if I ask
sure,
it really
absolutely.
Quickly. This question is for Scott Graham. Since we're removing the parking, where is it? Is there a proposed parking for the hotel at this point in the plan?
At this point, no. We haven't gotten to a point where they're actually submitting for a discretionary permit. We'll be talking with them about like how they want to address that component of their project when they come in.
Okay. Thank you. That was my only question, but I do want to say that I appreciate the space that is the public benefit of having that open space on the waterfront. In the public commentary that I heard in the Planning Commission meeting, a lot of people were concerned about lack of areas like that on the waterfront that have, you know, food nearby and just that sort of space, that meeting space. And I think it's a really appropriate area for that to happen. And so I'm excited to see that plan come forward, that marketing, you know, conceptual plan that comes forward, and to see that space develop. And I am also excited to see this project move forward. And sorry it took so long, but, you know, onward and upward. So thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Ford. Let's see. So I'm looking. No other comments. Okay. We will go ahead and do a roll call vote.
My hand is up.
I'm sorry, Jeff. I got three hands up. But
that's okay. I put it back up. I put it back up.
Go ahead, please.
And it's a follow-up question or comment to your motion regarding vetting financials. And I assume we have a policy in place, but I always get this feeling, I get comment from citizens that the financials are not adequately checked or we don't have processes in place. So when you say vetting financials, what does that specifically mean? So please, Scott Collins or somebody, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me there should be regular processes in place that would do that. Is that true or not true?
Great question. And you want me to respond, or Scott, you want to?
Sure, anybody, sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. You know, this wasn't something that was done in the past, but it's something that's become more common to look at. Of course, we haven't had a lot of big projects come forward. So there's still some work on it. There was the update to the lease management policy, you know, guidance on just generally speaking, but it didn't go into great laborious detail about what would actually be required. So I'll actually look to Eric and probably the mayor, since, you know, he worked on that as well, to see what their thoughts are, because we haven't had to do this for quite some time.
Yeah, or perhaps Sarah Johnson Rios might.
Yeah, she's not on that. She's not on this one, but yeah, we would be looking to her to conduct that alongside Eric. But as far as what would actually be looked at, you know, Eric, I don't know what you have thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, there's several factors. One is he needs to get financing for this project, a bank loan. You're not going to get a bank interested until you've get pretty a little farther along in the process, get some discretionary permits and potentially get no bank's going to give you a loan until you got a long-term lease to secure it. So there's a little bit of a cart and a horse thing here. You know, to answer Councilmember Heller's question, you know, a little more detail in terms of diving a little deeper, we did on one of the items on your consent agenda tonight was the Bayfront Marina. We got the city attorney and city finance director both directly involved in reviewing those documents. And it took us a good week to get through the financial review. So we are taking a deeper look. And we did it on that one and on the Bayfront Marina. And we would be doing it on this project as well. So I don't know, Mr. Mayor Heddingham, if you got anything more?
Yeah, I would just add two things. I think, Jeff, great question, by the way. Thank you for that. We have minimal language in the revised lease policy, but personally, what we did with TLC, we wanted to evaluate at this point in time with a COL the credit worthiness of the individual, so, you know, a routine credit check. And then since this is an LLC, to look at the financial pro formas for the LLC in its current existence to see if we have somebody that is a qualified, has qualified as a financier of other projects, and he is a developer and done other projects. And then when it came time to actually executing the lease or providing a lease, that there be, if there's going to be financing, that we have a commitment from a lending agency for that financing prior to approval of the MLA.
That sounds really good to me. I don't want this to be an onerous process, but on the other hand, we don't want projects foundering midway through design or something, particularly if the economy is going to become more difficult. So,
absolutely agree.
appreciate those comments. That's all I have. Thank you, Mayor. Okay.
You bet. Councilmember Addis, hand up? No?
Sorry, Mayor, no. I should have taken it down. My apologies.
All right, I'm trying to be aware.
We're all rusty. We're all rusty.
All right. Okay, if there are no more comments, then we will go to a roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Ford?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
And Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you. That completes item C-1. Brings us to item C-2. This is authorization for the mayor to sign a letter of support for a Coastal Stories Grant Program application from the Salinian Tribe of Monterey and San Luis Obispo counties. And I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Qualick.
Greg, thank you, Mayor. Yes, thank you. And I don't see, I do see Michael Woody. So I believe this will be a short presentation. It'll be verbal. We have been approached by the Salinan Tribe, specifically a rep from the tribe, Michael Woody, who also happens to be a CFAC member here in Morro Bay. The tribe is applying for a Coastal Stories grant through, I believe, the State Conservancy, and is requesting a letter of support from the city. There are some commitments that come with that letter, as detailed in the letter and in the staff report, namely a commitment to maintain the improvements, which I don't have any concerns with because it's land that we already maintain, as well as to designate a place for the improvements. And we did include a proposed area of Coleman Park in the staff report for that. So it's a pretty straightforward request, and Mayor, if it's okay, I'd like to give Mr. Woody the opportunity to speak on the issue. Okay, I'll just go ahead, Mike, and if you want to say a couple words.
Hold on. Hey, Mark, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out Zoom all over again as well. I totally understand. Mayor, members of the City Council, it's an honor to be here as always. And thank you so much for your consideration of this proposed project that we're working in conjunction with your amazing city staff, who's been incredibly helpful every step of the way on this. The Conservancy's Coastal Stories Grant Program is what they're doing is they're providing land grants to tribes, nonprofit organizations, and other public agencies to create storytelling installations and materials such as signage, murals, and monuments that represent communities and voices that typically and historically have been excluded from the storytelling along California's coast. Many places across the state of California that have a very European settler perspective in terms of the history and storytelling perspectives, a lot of that really needs to be addressed, as I'm sure all of you are aware of. The perspective typically teaches us that the public is giving them a very incomplete view of the history of our communities. And sometimes these stories, whether intentional or not, I think it's not intentional, but they seem to exclude Blacks, Indigenous, people of color, and many other groups that typically are not well represented in these stories. As a result, these materials typically send a message that many groups simply do not belong and are not welcome in many of our communities. This particular program is funding projects that develop and deliver installations and other products that represent stories that can be so often neglected in our communities. And by documenting and sharing these stories, we can create a much more inclusive community. As an actual certified Mission Indian for the Salinan Indians, I'm personally grateful of this opportunity to work with such a fine group of people from the Acorn Group, QK Incorporated, obviously the City of Morro Bay, amazing staff that is just world class. I mean, I can't say enough about them in helping create an interpretive planning area for the Salinan tribe. We've worked closely with your staff on this, locating an area right around Coleman Park, and would greatly appreciate your support in the resolution that is before you.
Thank you, Mr. Woody. Mayor, I'd just like to add that in the spirit of inclusivity, this week we met with the Filipino-American National Group. I can't remember the rest of their acronym. I'm sorry. They're not nationalists, but I think it's the Historical Society. And also next week we have a meeting with the Chumash tribe on Zoom to discuss similar proposals for that Coleman Park area. And that really is consistent and falls in line with suggestions and feedback we received from City Council, from the PWAB, and from the community about including historical and cultural amenities along the Coleman Harbor Walk.
Great. Thank you. And Michael, thank you for being here. And thank you for your service on our Citizens Finance Advisory Committee as well. We appreciate that. I'm going to go ahead and open it up to council member questions. Look for hands, raised hands. Council Member Heller, please.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Michael, for joining us this afternoon, this evening. Mr. Qualick, I guess we got some correspondence from Sean Green. I think it's a good question. But before I go to it, I want to say I totally support the storytelling piece that you're pursuing here. And I think your inclusion of the different groups is also very important. And I want to thank you for that. Very, very, it's absolutely the right thing to do. And these are important stories, and they certainly apply directly to Morro Bay here. So I'm glad to see that they're being told. My concern has to do with, it's brought to my attention by Sean Green, is it appropriate to locate them specifically before the master plan for Coleman Park is completed? So what are your thoughts about that?
Sure, and thank you for that question. I also received that correspondence. And first of all, I'll just say that the item before City Council tonight does not ask City Council to designate a specific place to them. We do have a proposed space, and we are just committing in that letter to designate some space somewhere in that Coleman Park area. So I will just say that council is not deciding on that tonight. As regards to, should we wait until we have a full design for the Coleman Park project, I think that's sort of a chicken and the egg thing. Right now we have a lot of momentum. We have three groups that are interested and may have very different kinds of proposals. And really, one thing that I've been advocating for in my discussions with these groups is to raise the bar and to raise the standard for what folks should expect on that Coleman Walk. We don't want to just do a storyboard. That's very good. That's a good start. But we'd like really a world-class monument or a statue or something like that along that walk so that people can come and experience the history and that location is actually a destination for people interested in learning history. And so right now we have an opportunity to partner with the Salinan tribe to do exactly that kind of thing because of this grant application. So again, as regards to the correspondence received, we aren't designating a specific place. We have a recommended place. Should the Salinan tribe receive the grant from the Coastal Conservancy, we would come back to council with more refined plans on exactly, where the design would be and what would be there for council approval.
Okay, that answers that question. Thank you. That's all I have here. Thanks.
Thanks, Councilmember Hiller, for bringing that correspondence up. I appreciate it. Other council questions? Seeing no hands, I'll go ahead, and open up public comment. This is public comment for item C-2 on our agenda this evening. Anybody wishing to make public comment on item C-2? Public comment is now open. And Highland, do we have public comment, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I see no raised hands in the queue.
Okay, I'll close public comment, bring it back to council. And I'll just say I this is a great project. I couldn't have said it better. Council Member Heller, thank you for your comments. I absolutely echo those. Agree that we need to tell these stories forever. And this is a great way of beginning the process of memorializing that. I'll be supporting the recommendation and I'll look for a motion unless there's further discussion. Council Member Heller, it looks like, and then Council Member Addis.
I will move approval of item C-2.
Okay.
I'll second.
Go ahead, Council Member Addis. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Motion by Council Member Heller, for approval of item C-2, second by Councilmember Addis. And any further discussion?
I have a comment to add.
Yes, please, please.
Yeah, no, I want to thank Mr. Woody both for his service on the Citizens Finance Advisory Committee, which is not quite as glamorous as getting to put in a monument at Coleman Beach, but I'm so excited that this is happening. I think it's a long time coming. I'm really proud of the council for beginning to have discussions around diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I want to say thank you to the SLNN, but also to Mr. Woody for bringing this forward and giving us the opportunity to kind of start to make good on that goal and make good on that promise. And it's one small step of things that we can do, but I appreciate your recognizing, you know, the need for honoring BIPOC communities, but also helping us identify something where we could actually take action. And so it's important to me that we're not just talking about these things, we're making movement on them, and this is an opportunity to do that.
Great comments, Councilmember Addis. I appreciate that. Councilmember Ford.
Thank you, Mayor. I should really just say ditto what Councilmember Addis just said, because it's like, I don't think I could top it. She said it so eloquently. But I will add that I kind of feel like it's appropriate that these cultural, honoring the history of our Indigenous people in Morro Bay is almost appropriate that comes before the other plan, you know, for Coleman Park. I think that planning around these monuments and these ideas is I feel appropriate. So I am totally for this project moving forward, and I'm excited to support it. So thank you.
Thank you. And Councilmember Heller, was your hand up again?
Yes. Thank
okay.
you very much.
Yes.
I would like to applaud Director Qualick for his vision for this, to make it more than just a plaque, but make it really a story and more experiential in nature. And I think that vision is just thrilling. And I want to thank you for taking it in that direction.
Excellent. Okay. We do have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll ask for a roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Ford?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
And Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Great. Thank you again, Michael, if you're still there. Appreciate it. Greg, thank you so much. That brings us to our last business item of the evening. This is item C-3, consideration of Morro Bay hosting an Ironman 70.3-mile, is that right? 70.3, wow. Swim, bike, and run event in April, May for 3 years, beginning in 2023. And authorize staff to develop a contract with the Ironman Group for such an event for City Council review. Mr. Collins, take it away.
Thank you, Mayor. We fully anticipate your participation in the event if it's approved.
Consider it done.
That's a condition that you didn't see in the recommendation line. Just kidding. But thank you, Mayor and Council members. It's my honor to present this potential opportunity and to discuss what this would mean and some of the potential challenges and opportunities, of course, that something of this nature could bring to our community. And I also have Tim Brocious, the regional director of Ironman for our area, who's on the line, and I'll ask him to come forward in a minute after I provide some introductory comments, and he'll provide a slide deck just sort of talking about Ironman generally and what an opportunity would look like in Morro Bay. But just by way of background, Ironman came onto the scene in the 1980s. There was a ragtag group of endurance athletes in the 70s who wanted to try something fun, and their idea of fun was swimming 2 miles, biking over 100 miles, and running a marathon after biking and swimming. Sounded like a great idea at the time, and that's it's just grown from that into a worldwide phenomenon. And you know, Ironman has gone from those humble beginnings to, you know, being on 5 continents and, you know, X number of countries and innumerable events, and broadened into shorter distance, like what's being proposed, the 70.3, biking and mountain biking events and the like, and really just kind of grown into a major phenomenon. Then there have been events in California, both in Santa Cruz and Oceanside, longstanding events. And now there's a potential for an event like this to come to Morro Bay. Morro Bay has had similar events here, but probably not to this scale and scope. We have traditionally held run events as well as triathlon events at a shorter distance. And of course, we hosted the Amgen Tour of California race several times, both a start of one of the segments of that race and a couple of finishes. There certainly is an interest in our community to look at these opportunities, particularly given that we are a focused on, you know, recreation activities, the great outdoors, and truly trying to broaden the type of individual that comes to our community from a visitor standpoint, tourism standpoint. So we're excited about what this might be able to mean for us. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Tim Brocious, who will provide a presentation on what Ironman would look like in Morro Bay. And they'll bring it back to me to kind of talk about some of the logistics and some of the things that staff's already looked at, as well as our conversations with Visit Morro Bay about helping to support such an event. So hopefully Tim has been promoted to a panelist. Let's see.
Yes, I'm here, Scott.
There you are. Okay.
Well, Tim, welcome.
You, Tim. Thank
welcome
you.
Welcome to Morro Bay.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it, Mr. Mayor and City Council and staff. Had a pleasure to work with Scott now quite a bit and talking about this event and the potential in hosting an Ironman 70.3 in the city of Morro Bay. I do have a presentation I'll share with you all tonight. It's got a lot of information in it, so I'll kind of go over the highlights of it, explain to you, you know, who I am, who Ironman is, and the potential event that we really like to host in Morro Bay. So along with many others tonight, I'm going to relearn Zoom and figure out how to share my screen. So let me get that, pull that up real quick. There we go. All right, is everyone able to see that there?
Yeah, yeah, can you hit slideshow, Tim? Yeah, there you go. Good.
Perfect. There we go. Okay. Thank you. So like I said, and Scott, thanks for the introduction. Tim Brocious with the Ironman Group, regional director for kind of the northwest of our region. There's a handful of us in the United States. I kind of oversee everything from Boulder, Colorado, kind of west of the Pacific Ocean, then north straight through Canada. We have a handful of events in Canada also. I know that Morro Bay is pretty south of Boulder, Colorado, but I oversee events in Santa Cruz, San Jose. And I'm currently sitting in a hotel room in Sacramento after a long day of city meetings and police meetings for an event that we host here, or I should say Sacramento hosts in October. So the Ironman Group, as Scott had mentioned, it started from a single race in Hawaii, and many of you may be familiar with the NBC show that highlights this event. This is the full distance Ironman race, which started in 1978 with about 15 people on the shores of Waikiki and has now grown to a massive, massive portfolio of events, not only triathlons, and half distance Ironmans, but also mountain biking, road running, road cycling, and just recently, actually in the last few months, trail running and endurance marathons. Auburn, California actually was our latest venture into trail and ultra running that we hosted just a month ago. So Morro Bay, what we're thinking of is approximately about 2,500 athletes, which it sounds like a lot, and it is. And with that comes a number of spectators, too, that would be drawn to your town and the surrounding communities to be able to help support the event. So really our mission at the end of the day is to put on great races in great places. What I always say to communities and to my staff is we want to put on events that people write home about, right? Like I want to be putting on an event where somebody's going to fill out a postcard and send it to their parents. And that's kind of our goal. We have these events in a lot of prestigious locations around the country, around the world, where I'm leaving for Victoria, British Columbia in the morning for 70.3. That's been going on in that town for 25 years now. We're celebrating the 25th anniversary there. So when we do look at these races and then these, you know, potential locations, we want to be long-term partners. We want to make sure that we're good for the community and that really that we align with what the community is looking for in an event partner and a business partner. And that's super important to us and something that we strive to make sure that our athletes and our friends and family that come with those athletes have something to write home about. A lot of information here about the history of the company. I kind of went over it a little bit. Again, started in 1978. We now have, I think last count is over 400 events on six continents. And that includes, like I said, mountain biking, trail running, road riding, and obviously triathlon. Here's an example of a number of the events in the portfolio. And again, you know, we're speaking here today about an Ironman 70.3 distance. So Mr. Mayor, that is correct. It's 70.3 miles. And I can go over the breakdown with you here. And it's actually a half Ironman. So the full Ironman is 140.6 miles, which is an insane distance to cover in one day. And then here's our global footprint. What's not shown here is our South American events. We probably have about 12 to 15. And those events are actually exclusively licensed. So we have a third party that uses the name, and then we have several staff members that oversee it just to make sure that they're staying to brand standards and safety standards that the Ironman events hold very high. And we have a group of our staff that oversee that. But you can see our footprint's pretty big. Our world headquarters is in Tampa, Florida, and we have a number of other offices in Europe, Asia, and Australia. So here's our, it's a lot of numbers here. Again, I'll go over some of the really highlighted points. For Ironman itself, as you can see here, the social following is over 4 million at this point, which is an incredible number between Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And then if you look at the bottom along Facebook Watch, a lot of our events are broadcast live. Right now, Outside TV is our current partner. Facebook Watch had been the partner for the last 4 or 5 years, I believe. And you can see for total reach of Facebook Watch was over 250 million people have actually logged in to Facebook and watched our events. And then this breaks down the digital reach just for an event, just one 70.3. So this is the Boulder 70.3. This is another longstanding event. This year is going, we're celebrating its 20th anniversary. So just in 2021, we had Facebook Watch there. What that means is similar to Amgen Tour of California. You have motos and cameras on those motos following the athletes along the course. So they're on boats during the swim. They get on motos for the bike and then generally motorcycles or e-bikes for the run. It's an impressive number that 11.6 million total impressions were made on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter just at that event alone. And when you look at the actual amount of people that streamed live, 1.1 million, it's pretty incredible to see when we raced, you know, just about 2,200 people to have over a million people actually watch is pretty impressive. Here's just some of the profile of our athletes. What you can see here, and I can share all of this and I'll share it with Scott so that you can all review this. But just looking at it, you can see, you know, the core demographic of people that race for us are very affluent. They're educated, extremely driven individuals, and they're very loyal, and repeat customers. So a lot of these athletes race with us more than one time a year. So you can see that here, the average athlete races 1.3 times a year with Ironman events specifically. And they train, generally like to train where they race. So a lot of these communities, these longstanding communities that have hosted these Ironman events, become training grounds for a lot of these athletes to come to, not during race week itself, but throughout the year to get out on the course and know exactly what they'll be up against on race day. It's more of breakdowns on who these athletes are and who the customer base is that races with us. Here's some travel data so you can see really where the athletes are coming from. Most are actually not local to the communities. So I know that's a big drive for a lot of the communities that host these events, that this is, you know, new money coming into the economy. This is hotel rooms being filled up, restaurants being filled up. And then you can see here too, how many people travel with the athlete that races. So at a 70.3, it's generally three or more that you'll see. Sometimes you see massive groups train or traveling with their athlete. And then we also do have a huge triathlon club following, where many times you'll get just a handful of members from a club come out and you'll have 20 people come and follow with those handful of athletes. This is just more of the travel data. Where do they stay and then how long do they stay? So you can see that, you know, at a 70.3, 78% will stay in a hotel, and the amount of stays is generally three or more. So for a half Ironman distance, this is something that it's almost a multi-day event with one day of racing. We do have an Ironman Village, and I'll talk to that a little bit more. But the big draw for this is that it is a real, you know, 2 to 3 day event with one day of racing. And then here's some of the community impacts. I definitely have a number of economic impact studies that I can share. I've shared with Scott, and I can forward on more of those if you'd like to review. A lot of the 70.3 communities will measure $8 to $10 million in economic impacts during the week of our event. We also do, like I noted earlier, see a lot of people coming in for these events to train earlier in the year, or they had a great time at the event and they come back with their friends and family for a vacation too. So most of our athletes stay in hotel rooms. Many of them will also stay in short-term rentals like Airbnb. But the economic impact is fairly large for these events. So I'll go through some of the kind of host city requirements. So this is where, you know, speaking with Scott and others in the community, we really do our homework on trying to make sure that if we want to put an event on in a community, that it's going to be the right community and it's going to be for a long time. We want to make sure that there's enough facilities, resources, venues that can actually host an event of this scale, and that it can host an event of this scale for many years to come. Oh, I don't know why this didn't pop up. There we go. So what we're talking about, again, this is a half-distance Ironman. This would be potentially late April or May of 23. The length of the contract, generally, we like to look at a three-year contract that kind of gives us a year to, after 1 year, kind of work out the kinks to make the event better. After year two, we really get to see the event unfold as it should be. And then year three, it's a well-oiled machine, and you can actually get a very good idea of what this impact for the community is. Is it a good partner with our brand, and is the event successful for everybody in the community too? And this is just a very brief sample of what race week would look like. And speaking with Scott, I think we're looking at a Saturday race. So this is a day off, but basically Monday through Thursday would be prep setup. That's tents, those are toilets, those are all the items that you would need for a race day being brought in. The day before the race, which would be Friday, is bike check-in. That's a huge day for all the athletes. They have to actually drop their bike off the day before, and we have security overnight at the location so that everything is secure. And then on Saturday would be race day itself, where, you know, we'd start basically as early as we can, generally around sunrise or civil twilight, we call it. As soon as we can safely put swimmers in the water, we like to start the race just so that our road closures are limited for affecting the community. And then teardown usually will be done by 7 p.m. Everything's locked and loaded in our trailers. And then the next day would be final loadout of breakdown of tents, of toilets, and picking up of any forklifts or anything needed like that. And then, of course, our trailers and rental vehicles would be picked up also. So here's part of the host city requirements, and again, what we do when we look at potential venue hosting an Ironman. So the swim is 1.2 miles. We're looking to do that in the Morro Bay Harbor itself, right there in the channel where it's deep enough to put athletes and wide enough for safety vessels to be able to safely monitor the athletes and get around, work around the course. The bike itself is 56 miles, so this is the largest segment of the race. That is one of the areas that, you know, really affects the greater community. So that's where obviously we'd have to vet this through Sheriff's Department, CHP, Caltrans, all who we have great relationships with already. And then the final leg of the triathlon is the 13.1 mile run. So the run course, generally we like to try and keep it in town, highlight the community. Some of the initial thoughts would be potentially through south towards Los Osos and then back, and ideally do a two-loop course so it's a little easier for spectators to watch their friends and family, and then it's a little easier also on road closures and getting around the race. Finish line, we always want it to be in the key part of the community. So for us, when looking at Morro Bay specifically, this would be on the Embarcadero. We really want to highlight that area and be able to bring kind of the crowds, the real finish line energy to that area. And that would be ideally the hub of race week is the waterfront there. Transition. So transition area is essentially where the athletes store their bikes and kind of the backbone of the event. So when they get out of the water, they grab their bike out of transition, they hit their 56 miles, come back, drop their bike off back in transition, they change into their run gear and head out on the run course. So transition area is another large area where we just have to be able to store all the bikes on the bike racks. And then some of the other space, when I'm again talking about looking at different communities and what, you know, is offered in the area and what we can utilize, biggest areas for us is the Ironman Village. So the Ironman Village is where the athletes actually come to pick up their bib and their timing chip and their registration packet. But it's also where our Ironman store is, the merchandise tent where they can go and purchase goods. It's where any of the vendors, if there's local vendors that want to be a part of the event, where they can actually have like a 10x10 pop-up store. This is a large expo area. Generally, we'd like to use an open parking lot where we can build some tents out and have a big flow of people through. We usually like to have some music. We have a stage that we do athlete briefings. That is a two-day, so for a Friday event, that would be a Thursday and Friday. This would be open generally about noon or one on Thursday, and it goes till about six or seven to allow people to get off of work and still be able to check in after. Some of the other areas, medical area, that's generally just a large tent near the finish line. That's for any of the athletes who really left it all out on the course and need some medical attention afterwards, or if they, you know, crashed or hurt themselves, they can get cleaned up there. We do have a very dedicated and very great functioning medical team that does support our events. And then the supply depot, the last one on the list here, that's kind of what I would call like a temporary field warehouse. So for us, a lot of times this this supply depot, this field warehouse, is again just a giant parking lot where we can park our semi trailer, where our supply lead can work off of his forklift and get everything inbound. So, you know, obviously we have a lot of shipments that come into the event. That's kind of the hub of the event. And this doesn't have to be anywhere near the Embarcadero. It doesn't really have to be near the race. We actually kind of like it to be set aside so that we can get in and out pretty easily throughout race week. But any kind of large parking lot is ideal for us there. So it's kind of, I know I threw a lot of information out there. I can speak all day on this, but I'd love to hear if you all have any questions about Ironman specifically, what this would look like. I'd love to be able to answer those questions at this time.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim. I'll go ahead and conclude on our end and then leave it questions open for both Tim and myself. Building off of what Tim shared, you know, there's obviously a lot of potential uptick for visitorship and also post-race, just sort of recognition opportunities for Morro Bay for people to come visit after the event. Of course, there is also, you know, potential impacts and known impacts for hosting such a massive event where you have up to 2,500 athletes and plus maybe one or two or more folks watching every single athlete. So that's another several thousand compressed in one area. So we've done some research on this. When I was in the city of Santa Cruz, that was around the time that Ironman was taking over a longstanding triathlon event, and worked with the permitting officer when I was working for the city manager's office there. So well attuned to the actual individual who would probably run the event here on the ground. And then police officer, police commander Watkins, that is, went to the Oceanside event, which was held at the very beginning of April of this year, and spent time with the race, the city's equivalent, you know, event coordinator, to really get a sense of what that event has done for Oceanside and what it actually means in terms of impact to community, both positive and negative, as well as city staff, because we would be called upon to help coordinate the event, of course, on logistics, but also bringing law enforcement, paramedics, and lifeguards to bear to the actual event to ensure that it's conducted safely, because, yes, while economic benefit is a driver, safety is paramount over all things. So having a safe event is key. So there's a lot that goes into ensuring that that occurs, in addition to sort of the footprint that Tim discussed in terms of city space on the Embarcadero and elsewhere to help kind of bring their little traveling city to Morro Bay, as it were. So we feel confident, sort of based on the experience I have had in Santa Cruz and what Commander Watkins experienced in Oceanside and talking with that city as well since that time, that we could pull something off like this. And talking with Tim, you know, obviously some of our concerns is around just parking in general, making sure we have sufficient parking. But we have had in the past the ability to use sites off outside of the city as a place for parking, and then to use trolleys and other mechanisms to bring people to and from to help reduce that impact. There would be impact, since we're moving to Saturday, there would only be one day of impact, but to Fisher folks who would be trying to get into the in out of the boat launch ramp, so there would be an impact to that for the day of the event, which would be a Saturday. There's obviously permitting requirements outside of the city, such as state parks, The Rock, Slow Sheriff, Caltrans, and CHP. But of course, as Tim mentioned, they have a lot of experience doing that, both in Santa Cruz and Oceanside, which are our closest equivalent a race. Beyond that, you know, the expected economic impact, you know, we anticipate anywhere from $200,000 to $300,000 in local taxes generated from an event like this because of the number of days that folks are in market. Unlike Amgen, which was, you know, they race here, they finish here, maybe stay one night. Most of these athletes are staying three or four nights in advance of the actual event. So there's just a lot more economic activity generated. Unlike some of the events we've had on the waterfront, you know, Ironman doesn't bring a bunch of outside vendors into our town. They try to turn their participants and spectators into customers of our restaurants and our retail, of our hotels. So it has a different feel to it. And they also do a lot of connection out to the community for other kind of community positive impact as well. So, you know, based on kind of what we've reviewed and our experience with other events here and also experiences of Ironman elsewhere, we believe that this could work here, which is why we'd recommend, you know, kind of giving the thumbs up and then working on a contract that we could bring back to City Council. Certainly with having to bring law enforcement, paramedics, and lifeguards to bear on this, there could be a cost to the city. That's why I put that in the financial impact section. But Visit Morro Bay, the T-bid for Morro Bay, the board approved up to, I think, $50,000 or $60,000 potentially each year to help kind of contribute to the overall effort in some fashion, form or fashion, which is great. We're talking to Visit SoCal and the other DMOs that would benefit because we simply don't have enough hotel rooms to cover all these athletes and spectators. So there would certainly be positive spillover into the other communities that are adjacent to us. So we're trying to work through those channels to see if we could also get some contributions to limit the overall impact. And it's also important to note, I've been really talking to Tim about just sort of notification, both to for our business community to be able to benefit from this, but also folks who would be on the race course, designated race course, which has a lot of work to do before we even come close to finalizing a race course. But ultimately, when that is finalized, there's a lot of pre-work and getting the word out about when road closures will come, where they'll be. We have, you know, obviously Ironman has a lot of experience with that. So do we with Amgen, that we can learn from to improve how we communicate to our community members who would be affected by that so that they can be prepared. So I don't want to present this that there will be no impact. There certainly is. But there's also a lot of upside to this in terms of the week of it, as well as the ancillary, just getting the word out about Morro Bay being a place for recreation. So we would recommend kind of giving a thumbs up and then being able to submit a letter of support to or letter of interest to Ironman so that they can at least begin planning the event. But we still need to bring forward a contract that, you know, staff would be comfortable presenting with the city attorney's review to City Council in June of this year. So I know you have lots of questions, and Tim has offered himself up to answer those, as have I. Also, just want to thank the city permitting team, led by Kirk Carmichael, recreation manager, but you know, Jody Cox, our police chief, Amy Watkins, police commander, Eric Endersby, harbor, and Becca in harbor, because a lot of the impact would obviously be in the harbor area, and public works, of course, Dan McCrane and our fire chief, and Matt Vieira, fire division chief and fire marshal. List goes down the line. We've already taken a pretty good look at this as a team just to see if we could actually fit it within the confines of the city. And then the real work begins and really kind of the race course determination and logistics and permitting. But just wanted to say thank you for them spending time on the upfront to see if this may work for our community. So with that, I'll turn it over to the council. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott, for the comprehensive review and engaging staff really early on in this. I think it's really important to do that. And Timmy, thank you for your presentation and the data. And I'm going to open it up to our council questions. Councilmember Heller, sir, please lead us off.
Yes, Tim, thanks a lot for the presentation. Wondering if you could add rock climbing to your portfolio of events here for Morro Bay. It might be something to think about. Seriously, though, the thing I'm most interested in is your relationship with young athletes, and I was looking at your website, and I'm wondering about the You Buy, We Give youth membership campaign. Can you explain that to me a little bit?
I actually wish I had a good answer for you on that. I assume this is the bike building campaign. Is that the one you're referring
you know,
to?
I'm not sure. I thought it had something to do with I should have read it in greater detail, but I'm interested in the kid portion and the kid events. How do you promote that in local communities?
Yeah, no, and that's a great question. And honestly, not having an exact answer for your initial question is really just because we do have so many programs that our Ironman Foundation works on. So we do have a nonprofit branch that's integral for our event success and our business success. What we do for our nonprofits, there's two kind of ways to answer this. One is for the kids, we do have a kids race at almost every event. So Iron Kids is generally either a splash and dash, which is just, you know, a short swim and then a run, or a fun run. So it can be anywhere from we do a baby crawl down the finish line carpet all the way to a 2 mile run for some of the teens. And it's just a way for us to engage all the family and friends that come out to support their, you know, parents or siblings or whoever's racing. But the other side of, you know, the flip side of the answer too, then, is our Ironman Foundation, the nonprofit, works very closely with Iron Kids on service projects, on recruiting volunteers. So the way that our kind of community give back through sport occurs is through the Ironman Foundation itself, and the way that we kind of drive volunteers and give back to the local community is, say there's the high school volleyball team wants to sign up and work a water station out on the run course. Their coach or a parent of one of the players would be a captain of that team, and that captain then actually fills out a grant application. It's super simple, one-page grant application, and then that actually allows us to give funding from our nonprofit to their group for their volunteerism during the event. And that can range anywhere from $500 to $1,500 to help offset jersey costs, travel costs, anything like that. So generally at a 70.3 distance, our Ironman Foundation will have a big impact and tries to give anywhere between $15,000 and $20,000 through volunteers and grants.
Okay. Thank you. That was my main question, and I'm serious about the rock climbing.
Good. Councilmember Ford, please.
Thank you, Mayor. And great presentation, Tim. I appreciate it. And thank you, Scott Collins, as well, for the additional information. I have a lot of questions. And the first one I have kind of touches on what Councilmember Heller already talked about, but I'm curious, When you partner with our business community and our local nonprofits and our community, how do you go about partnering? What does the outreach look like? And if you have any examples, you know, I would love to hear how that comes about during these events.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Thank you. You know, for us, we want to put on world-class events with a community feel. So, you know, for us to be partnering with businesses, generally it's through city council, it's through the visitors bureau that, you know, we can make connections with people that want to be a part of the event. For us, for example, like Boulder, Colorado, where we have had a longstanding event, the school district always wanted to be a big part of it. Not only do they bring out a number of students for volunteering during it, and, you know, of course, a lot of people in that community, their parents are also racing, but the school district to kind of help bring in some funding during the summer months started utilizing their school buses as shuttles, and we're one of the biggest drivers for that. So no pun intended, but we do use about 40 of their school buses just for the 2 days that we move athletes and spectators to and from the reservoir. So that was all generated just from the school district starting this program to get a little bit more funding in a time that they generally don't see it, where buses are generally sitting in a lot and drivers are at home, not driving the buses. So that was one way that has been successful for us for years. It helped the event, helped alleviate a lot of the traffic kind of chaos and parking that we had out at the Boulder Reservoir. And now we utilize these shuttles and that school district program to bring a little bit of funding to them, but also helps really the event be a seamless event in the community.
Okay, great. Thank you. I have a few more questions. One of them is since the pandemic occurred, or started, I should say, what is What is the turnout like for Ironman? You know, I've seen your numbers through 2016, and just curious, like, what does that turnout look like nowadays?
Yeah, and that's actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because yeah, when you look at some of that data, it's all pre-COVID, right? It's hard to base some of it. And now I do have a little bit more data, and I can share some of the more current events from 21, and then some of the events we've hosted here in 22. For the 70.3 distance events, they just continually knock it out of the park, for lack of better terms. We're seeing sold out events. Santa Cruz has less than 100 people left. Boulder has less than 50. Victoria, that we're putting on this weekend, is sold out. We just raced 70.3 Chattanooga this past weekend with over 3,000 athletes. So the kind of sentiment that we're seeing is people want to get back to racing. The 70.3 distance specifically has been super successful. It's a little more achievable than, you know, the full distance 140 miles. So for us, it's really been a bread and butter. It's really been driving our engine, is that 70.3 distance.
Okay. That sounds, I'm glad that it's doing so well, all things considering. As far as, I saw on your slides, you know, you talk about, the type of person that participates. What did I miss it, or did you mention the regions that typically people come from? Or are they closer, or are we talking like from across the country, internationally? What are we looking at as far as the typical person that would come to Morro Bay to participate?
Almost every race has an international field. You know, pre-COVID, I would say every race did. Nowadays with travel restrictions, it's a little different. I would say, you know, I can pull up some of that data to answer you, but for the most part, about 60% of the athletes are coming from over 150 miles away. So for, you know, Morro Bay specifically, and why it's a really geographically sits in a great location, is how close it is driving distance to Los Angeles and San Francisco, because people can get in their car, they can put their bike in their car or on their bike rack and drive down. But we do have about 40% of those athletes, 30 to 40% will actually be flying in and spending a good amount of time in the community. I can certainly give you better information for, you know, a current event like Oceanside that just happened. I can share that with Scott for sure and have him send that to you.
Awesome. That'd be great. Thank you. My next question, sorry, I have a few questions. So my next question is, when you have events like this and there's businesses that have to shut down for the day of operation for the event, like our local kayak rental companies and that sort of thing, do you have an idea of what the economic impact will be for businesses that are unable to operate? I mean, is that something that you've measured in the past? And is there some way to mitigate that loss that you have seen that has been successful with businesses that basically lose revenue during this time?
That's awesome that you asked that, actually, and brought up the kayaks or stand-up paddle boards. Most of our events, like if that business has to be shut down, what we actually like to do is rent out all of their vessels. So all of their kayaks, stand-up paddle boards for the water safety crew. So what we try to do for every 50 athletes, we try to have one certified lifeguard. And many times that can be, you know, somebody that works at the rec center and is a lifeguard coming out to volunteer, but they don't own a kayak. We'll try and provide that. At other events, we've rented out the vessels for a day. And then as long as people sign a waiver, we've allowed spectators while their friends and family are out on the bike course. We've allowed, you know, obviously with authorization of the business, to let the spectators go out for a half hour or an hour and paddle around. Obviously, it gives them something to do. It gives them a way to kind of explore the area. And those are just some of the small steps we've taken. If that's, you know, something feasible in Morro Bay, it's been successful in many of our other events. It'd be something that I think we'd look at also trying to do too.
That's great. I'm glad that I did ask that question because it was weighing my mind. The last question that I have for you tonight is regarding, and I don't know if you know this off the top of your head, but what are the broadcast rights when it comes to Ironman? For example, if we wanted to live stream any portion of this race or capture it for future use for, you know, are there any limitations as far as broadcasting goes for our city and business?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know if I have the exact answer. For events that are live streamed through outside TV, generally, you know, they would have that broadcasting right. I'm sure we'd work with you if you wanted to utilize footage. But that's something I'd have to find out. It's a great question. You stumped me. I don't know.
I think this is a question that maybe Michael Wembolt would also like to know, probably for a visit more.
Yeah.
I'm just curious how that works moving forward and using that footage. So, okay. Well, that's all my questions that I have this evening. Thank you so much for answering all of them. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Councilmember Ford. Councilmember Addis.
Thank you, Mayor. This might be more of a staff question, but how does this timing go with the road work that's happening between here and Cayucas on the bridge? Is that expected to be fully complete? And if not, like, I'm just imagining cyclists on that portion of the road.
Yeah, that's a good question. And you know, like I said, that everything's sort of contingent on, well, at least the race course design is contingent upon Caltrans and CHP supporting it. So obviously that will be factored in, but that's a great point, Councilmember Addis, because I know that work is underway. So I don't have the answer, but obviously that would be factored in. There has to be sort of a way in. So some way it needs to be stated. It has to be open, and if you can't have it open, that would probably be a problem.
Okay, but that would be somehow addressed by
By
the time this gets more concrete.
Yeah.
Okay, and then my other question, well, let me just preface my other question by saying I would love to have Ironman here. I think it's phenomenal. I think it's super exciting for Morro Bay. It's a wonderful fit on a bunch of different levels, and my colleagues have asked, you know, a lot of the important nitty-gritty questions, and I want to appreciate that. And Morro Bay has a goal in the area of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I'm just wondering what Ironman specifically has done to increase its efforts around diversity, equity, and inclusion. I know there's like Black Kids Swim, and there's, you know, you have a consulting firm. I was just kind of Googling you. I'm sure you've done work in this area. But it's important to me as we start to embark on these kinds of conversations, and as we've said that this is a goal for us when we have new opportunities, just as we did with the last agenda item, brought something forward that we could really make a difference on, that we're thinking about that and have it in the forefront of our conversation. And so just kind of wondering where you're at with DEI, with gender, with race, and with any other ways that Ironman is approaching DEI.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. And it sounds like you did your research, which obviously led to you seeing that we are making efforts. You know, I think as an organization, we realized there's a very single demographic for a long time that was racing these events. And that was a white male, right? We also realized that it's not a cheap sport. You know, it costs a lot of money to get into this. So we are making efforts. I would say that those that are leading the charge is our Ironman Foundation. And that is what you had brought up, I think, with the Black Kids Swim and being able to kind of help anybody that's either intimidated to get into the sport. Our foundation has really led the way to go out to rec centers, to go out to the communities, and be able to make this an achievable event for people of color and be able to get them to the start line, whether that be helping them financially, helping them with a rec center pass so they can practice swimming. These are all kind of small items that make a big impact, and really it depends on each community that we go to. So there's certain communities where we do need to step up those efforts, and there's other communities, sounds like Morro Bay, who's themselves making efforts already, and we can work side by side with them. Again, a lot of those efforts are through the foundation, and the foundation can tailor the specific event to what the community is trying to do and partner together to kind of enhance any of the diversity and inclusion efforts.
And then I guess along those lines, like, are there policies around gender, gender diversity, LGBTQIA plus athletes and participation?
There's policies being made. I mean, we're very inclusive. We're not going to try and exclude anybody for any reason. If there's anybody who's non-binary, you know, what we would do is set up a change tent just, you know, for them, so that generally we have a men's or women's change tent in transition, you know, to change out of your cycling gear to get into your running gear. You know, we do make efforts for non-binary athletes. We understand that that's, you know, they're human, they're trying to race with us. So we do try to include them in any way that we can. Again, it a lot of times comes on a case-per-case basis. But it is something that I would say, you know, is something our company is striving to continue to do and be a forefront leader in the endurance space. I think there's great organizations out there, some of those that we've already partnered with, and there's other event producers that we're learning from that are really good at DEI efforts. So.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm really excited. I encourage us all to continue that part of the conversation. And I want to really recognize, too, what you said about cost, because sometimes that gets lost in the DEI conversation. And so thank you for kind of recognizing that aspect of this. And I'm hopeful from what I've heard this evening. So thanks.
Thanks, Councilmember Edis. Councilmember Martin, please.
Well, I wanted to thank my fellow council members for the wonderful questions they've asked. Some of them were things I had thought of, some of them not at all. And I'm just really pleased at the level of vetting that we're doing here tonight. I wanted to say that in the past years, I've helped out at a couple of the bike races here and thought, oh, this is a big deal. And now what I'm hearing is like, whoa, this is much, much bigger. And so it's kind of exciting, but also in a way a little bit scary to throw such a big party, let's put it that way. And so so anyway, I'm excited to continue on in the conversation and see where we go.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it. And I think you said it best. It is quite the party. It's a big event. And it takes, you know, it takes a village for sure. And I think everybody kind of understands that, but I know from, you know, the tour of Amgen, that's a big event. This is quite different. You know, they kind of rolled in and out of town. Whereas, as Scott Collins had said, you know, these athletes, these spectators, they'll be hanging out in town for many days surrounding that weekend.
Yeah, it's a different animal. So I'm looking forward to continuing the conversation.
Thank you.
Good. You guys have asked really great questions. So, but I do have one along the lines of DEI, Tim, that I'll ask you specifically. And as I recall, you do have awards for winners, basically?
Yep.
Correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So my question is, do you measure or monitor or test for performance-enhancing drugs?
Good one.
Which could unequally, I'll use the word, advantage an athlete, obviously, that might be doping or you know, using testosterone, build muscle mass, those kinds of things. Wondering what you folks do with regard to that.
Yeah, so we do. We work with WADA, the World Anti-Doping Association. We have a representative, a full-time staff member on our team who oversees that globally for us. The kind of short answer is if we have a pro race with athletes being able to win prize money, we will absolutely be testing. For the most part, I would say 2/3 of our events are age group athletes. who at the end of the day are really, their goal is to get to the world championship event. And because they're not professional, because they're not winning any kind of monetary funds, we do not test. So if it's a pro race, we'll test. If it's not, we don't. So it's kind of the easy cut and dry. Yeah.
That's fair. Thank you. Appreciate that. All right. That ends the questions. I'm going to go ahead and open up public comment. This is public comment for item C-3 on our agenda. Any member of the public wishing to comment, public comment is open. And Highland, how are we doing for public comment?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First up for public comment, we've got Cal Myers.
Okay. Welcome, Cal.
Hello. It looks like I'm off mute. I was pretty excited to hear that they're going to do a half Ironman here in Morro Bay. I've done about a dozen different triathlons, four of them made the 70.3. The question I have for the presenter was, you know, they used to have the Wildflower for 20-plus years up at Lake San Antonio. They had a lot of the, let's say, infrastructure in place with the Cal Poly kids helping out with all the water stops along the course. Is there any advantage to, you know, reaching out to that organization, see if you can leverage any of that infrastructure that they had set up? It's been a couple of years. And also the other piece is they had the village, you know, they had a lot of camping out there with RV parks. I don't know if there's any appetite for the city to have, you know, a big sort of village atmosphere for a number of RVs to park, kind of like what they did there for Wildflower. That's one of the questions I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Cal. Public comment is still open. Highland, next public comment.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Up next, we've got Mary Witkowski.
Okay. Welcome, Mary.
Hi, thanks. I just didn't notice necessarily an estimate from the city on what the economic impact and cost of this would be, like even with an order of magnitude. And I was just thinking, like, if Ironman has 2,500 athletes at about $400 an athlete, that's $1 million in revenue that they'd be making from this. And if we're expecting to make $200,000, but we're covering all the costs for the permits and overtime for city employees, for the harbor, police department, medics, et cetera, it didn't necessarily seem, like, fiscally responsible for me. So I was just wondering, like, if there was any assessment done on what, and not to mention opportunity costs for all the time that the city would be spending helping to plan this. So I was just interested in more info on that.
Thank you, Mary. Highland, next public comment.
Thank you again, Mr. Mayor. Our final public comment is from Michael Lambolt.
Okay, welcome, Michael.
Council, I appreciate your time on this, and I appreciate your consideration on this item. A lot was covered in this presentation from Ben. We've had a chance to meet with him a couple times, so I can walk through what's possible. More of a key did is extremely
important. Michael, you're cutting out. We've lost Michael. Can you hear me? Michael, are you still there?
Can you guys hear me now?
Now we can, yes.
Okay, great. I apologize for that. The Morro Bay T-Bid is, and Visit Morro Bay is extremely interested in this possibility as we look at new events in the area. This we feel fits with the brand of our outdoors and the carryover branding that Ironman would bring to Morro Bay as a world-class outdoor destination for recreation would be bar none for us. As I mentioned as well, this will be different from Amgen, where this is starting here and finishing in Morro Bay, which gives us great representation. Scott Collins mentioned the Morro Bay T-Bid. Board of Directors has approved a $50,000 sponsorship for this, but we do have to go through contracting. So I want to thank you for your amazing questions you had through the time frame and the consideration on this.
Thank you, Michael, and thank you for the support. Highland, any other comments?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have no more public commenters in the queue.
Okay, thank you, sir. I'll close public comment, bring it back to council. Just maybe, Scott, can you briefly comment? I know you went over economic impact in your report, but did you want to add anything to Mrs. Witkowski's comment?
Yeah, good questions by Mary and comments from Cal as well. You know, on average, looking at some of the economic impacts reports that conducted by third parties that Tim shared with me, you're looking at upwards of about $10 million in economic activity generated in the community, you know, and what the city would render in terms of, you know, taxes is probably in the $200,000 to $300,000 range. So that sits above, you know, what the city would anticipate spending, maybe upwards of $100,000 for the event. But as Mr. Wambolt mentioned, you know, the TBID is looking to put in about $60,000. That's not to say that'll offset all to offsetting the city's costs, but it probably could cover half of it potentially. So there's obviously negotiations that will need to be conducted with them, you know, because they obviously need to make a profit on this or they wouldn't do it. But we want to come out of this just on event day. We want to come out ahead. And then there's the exposure components, which is why TBID is willing to invest upwards of $60,000 each year for 3 years, which is unprecedented level of support because of the exposure to the millions of fans who will be exposed to Morro Bay, both those who are participating on the day of and those who are spectating, but those who are watching at home and see that Morro Bay is a destination that they didn't know about, or they did, and now it's reinforced their additional reasons to visit. So it's that long-term effect that makes it worth it beyond just making sure that we more than break even during the event itself, which I believe looking at the numbers we will, and based on my experience when I was working for the city of Santa Cruz and also our, again, Commander Watkins going down to Oceanside and talking with their city team who, you know, was going to tell us the straight truth because they've been working with Oceanside for, Oceanside's been working with Iron Man for a long time. And, you know, they had only good things to say about what it meant for their community. And they're not on Iron Man's payroll. So, that's good. That's good to hear. And that's a recent event. So, we feel confident that it'll again more than break even during the week of, and then there'll be the spillover effect of exposure.
Tim, just the question about for Mr. Myers about do you reuse any infrastructure for races that have been in close proximity?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's a legendary race, the Wildflower. It's unfortunate that it's currently not scheduled to take place. We do, the event world is pretty small, as you can all imagine. So we have a lot of people have either worked Wildflower, raced Wildflower, and been there and spoken with them. So we'd probably reach out to them to see if there's any resources that we could utilize. For the most part, having two events, you know, the Santa Cruz and Oceanside ones, not too far away. We actually have a lot of local resources that we already utilize, but we do reach out to any of the other event promoters. Obviously, there's a Olympic distance and sprint distance in Morro Bay already. So, you know, we'd have conversations with that group just to make sure that they're aware that, you know, we want to host an event or that Morro Bay would like to host an event with us, but that if there's anything, you know, any nuances to the local community that, you know, we should know about, and then how do we partner together to make both successful is important to us. We don't want to come in and squash anybody that's currently a business member putting on an event. So to answer the short answer for Wildflowers, we haven't spoken with them yet. I think they've kind of dissolved as an organization a little bit. I could be wrong there, but we haven't had any conversations just yet. And then as far as the RV parking camping goes, I know that was a big part of kind of the culture of Wildflower. At certain events, and it sets itself up in a way to be able to have camping. You know, we have a lot of events in state parks and such where people haul in or rent RVs or sprinter vans. If that's feasible at Morro Bay, that's something that we would absolutely advertise, and we hope that any local RV parks and businesses would advertise with us to be able to say that they can host RVs and campers.
Good, thank you. Okay, I'll bring it back to council and either entertain a motion or any further discussion. Councilmember Ford. You're muted.
Oh my gosh, it was my turn.
Got you, yeah.
I want to say rookie mistake, but
No, just rusty. Rusty mistake.
Yeah.
So I would like to move us forward with the consideration of Morro Bay hosting an Ironman 70.3 mile swim, bike, and run event. So I would like to approve the concept, I guess. I don't know, do I need to read the entire paragraph?
I think you just read the recommendation.
Okay. So I move that we approve the concept of the City of Morro Bay hosting an Ironman event, 70.3 mile swim, bike, and run in April/May for 3 years, beginning in 2023, and authorize city staff in consultation with the city attorney to develop a 3-year event agreement with the Ironman group to be brought back to city council for review no later than June 28th, 2022. Further, authorize staff to submit a letter of interest to the Ironman group outlining the city's support for such an event concept conditioned upon city council review and approval of an event agreement.
Perfect. Councilmember Addis.
I'll second.
Okay, a motion by Councilmember Ford for the staff recommendation, second by Councilmember Addis. Any further discussion? Councilmember Heller.
Yes, I'd just like to thank Timmy for your presentation. Very excited about this. It's just a great opportunity for Morro Bay, and I think it's just perfect for the region as well. So thank you for working with us on this. And Scott Collins, go for it.
Thanks. Councilmember Ford.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm excited at the potential that this, the return of athletes coming back each year, the broadcasting of this event and bringing people to Morro Bay to see what it's all about. They can see the beauty through social media and other, sources, and maybe they want to come and see what it's all about. I think that this has a great potential to be something huge and puts Morro Bay on the map. And so for that reason, I put forth the motion, but I just, I want to thank Visit Morro Bay, Michael for Wamble for listening in on their meetings and the work that they have done on this, along with our city staff, working with Ironman, and for Tim, for you coming this evening and giving this presentation and being so willing to answer all of our questions. And I'm just excited. If you can't tell, I'm excited about this event. And That's all I
was saying. Thanks, Jen.
And you got to add, you got to amend the motion to make sure the mayor has to participate. So.
Well, I'm going to let Councilmember Addis comment, and then I'll comment on the criteria for that.
No, I was just going to also say thank you to his staff. It's clear a lot of energy has been put into researching this, and it's clear a lot of conversations have been had already to see if this was worth bringing forward to council, if it has potential for Morro Bay. I feel like what was brought to us this evening has been well thought out for what it is, and there's a little bit of a ways to go, obviously, but I can tell there's energy that's already put in, and I appreciate that.
Great. And, great council questions. Thank you all. You asked some really probing, very good questions, and I appreciate that. And excellent discussion. Tim, thank you for the great presentation. Scott, thank you for getting the idea forward to us, and for all of your staff that were involved in vetting that and bringing it. It really looks exciting. Tim, the requirements for council member Heller and myself, if we can ride our electric bikes, we're in. So if you'll allow that as an accommodation through DEI, we would appreciate that. And I will tell you, Tim, just for your edification, iron is the most prevalent element in the universe. I don't know if you know that. It is one of the top 10 strongest elements. I'm sure you know that. In fact, it's the fifth strongest. It has a mass of 55.84 units. It's 8 times the density of water. And you should also know that the reason they call it Iron Man is because the number one hard, strongest element is tungsten, and tungsten man would not go over well in the long term for you. So thank you for what you do. It's exciting for what you're going to bring to the city. And I will call the roll call vote.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Ford?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
And Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Fantastic. That brings us to item D, Council Declaration of Future Agenda Items. I do have one. I haven't vetted it with staff as of yet, but I think it will be simple. Given the reference earlier to the school shooting that occurred today, I think it would be important for council to receive an update from our school site officer and our two principals to look at what our schools are doing right now and get an update from our schools with regard to active shooter preparation and prevention, and what the city potentially can do to partner with our schools to improve the safety and or partner in decreasing anxiety, processing, all the things that have happened currently, and whatever resources we might be able to offer in partnership to the school district. Councilmember Addis.
I would support that, and I just wanted to add that Dr. Prater, the San Luis Coastal Unified School District superintendent, put out a message this evening and shared some resources about talking to children about violence, anxiety over school shootings, going back to school after a tragedy. So I believe that's a public message that went out to all parents in the school district, but also could be accessed by the public. And just to let people know that the school district is here and is sharing resources. And I support what you're asking for, Mayor, but also if folks are in need of resources right now, that the superintendent did send some out this evening.
Thank you for that update. I appreciate that.
And I'll just add on to that, the superintendent for the county, Dr. Brush, he sent an email to city managers and said, Sheriff Ian Parkinson and him will be convening an all-district charter private parochial school leaders to review safety protocols and proactive school response measures in response to what occurred. And you know, our police chief has been very proactive with the Sheriff Ian Parkinson in the past and doing trainings, you know, preparing for the worst, obviously, but also trying to be proactive as well. So, and I've had conversations recently with Dr. Prater about how to help fortify security. Unfortunately, we have to think about this at our elementary school in our own city, right? So definitely on top of mind for myself and for my staff. And so we can bring something back soon on that, if that's the pleasure of the council.
Yeah, and Scott, thank you. I apologize. I didn't get a chance to vet it with you for
that's okay.
Prior. But this all happened when I watched, you know, the news this afternoon, and it suddenly came to mind that I think it would be an important update and conversation for us to have. So it looks like I see head shaking. Thank you, Dawn, for the support. Everybody okay with that? Good. Okay. Anything else?
Mayor, can I just add one thing?
Yes.
If we do get such a presentation, if a piece of this could be on not just safety and security, but preventative measures, mental health supports, things that are happening in the community that, for lack of a better term, are considered wraparound supports. So while I very much want to know about what's happening with the school resource officer and school security, there's a whole other component to this that has to do with being a welcoming community and a community that notices and outreaches and has supports available. And I know those exist in Morro Bay, and I think it'd be a good time to weave those in to be making sure we're sharing out again.
Totally understand, and I do agree. Scott, are you clear enough on that? Is that
yes. Okay. I'll convene with Police Chief Cox later this week and figure out how we can bring something forward soon to council.
And Dawn, thank you for bringing the school resources knowledge to us. Well, I appreciate that greatly. Okay, anything else for the greater good? Seeing nothing, we will go ahead and adjourn the next regular meeting of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay. Will be tomorrow at 5:30 p.m. to continue our discussion on the budget, the WRF specifically, CIP projects, and the Harbor Department. Thank you for the privilege of your time. Have a great evening, and we will see you tomorrow.
Everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Everybody.